Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. A quick reminder, you can find Sports Whispers Weekly and the Missy AE podcast by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE, or you can find us on any of our major podcast networks like iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and so forth. And also, if you want to join in on the conversations, the many different conversations around sports, you can join the Sports Whispers group on Facebook by going to facebook.com/groups/sportswhispers, or you can just search for Sports Whispers in the search bar and it'll pop up. But anyways, we have a lot to get to tonight, and unfortunately, We have to start off with some terrible news that has officially hit the sports entertainment / wrestling world. But first, I have Lou and Diane on the line with me so far tonight. And we'll just basically start off here with within the span of 2 days. On Wednesday and Thursday. First Wednesday, we lost ECW / hardcore legend Terry Funk to natural causes at the age of 79. And in particular, it did say, though, that he was diagnosed as living with dementia and he was living in an assisted living facility as of June 2021. He did end up dying on Wednesday at a Phoenix area hospital, especially after they had claimed that he had returned home and was doing well, but reportedly it is due to natural causes that he passed away. Terry Funk, for people who don't know who he is, before he became a hardcore icon, he spent multiple years wrestling for the National Wrestling Alliance and all of the different territories that they had with his brother, Dory Funk Jr. Then he went over to Extreme Championship Wrestling, which at the time, before it was Extreme Championship Wrestling, it was actually called Eastern Championship Wrestling, which was an affiliate of the NWA. The National Wrestling Alliance. They then turned to Extreme Championship Wrestling, where Terry Funk pretty much solidified his name into the Hardcore Hall of Fame in the former ECW arena with many of his performances that he put on. And Terry Funk was honored last night by the WWE alongside our next unfortunate death, Bray Wyatt, also known to many fans, he's known as Bray Wyatt, but his real name is Wyndham Rotunda. He is the son of Mike Rotunda, also known as IRS, and the grandson of Blackjack Mulligan, and also two of his uncles are Barry and Kendall Windham as well. So he comes from a very prestigious family. I mean, obviously, you know, there's other prestigious wrestling families like the Rhodes, the Flairs, the Harts. Yeah, especially the Flairs. I mean, when you consider championships and whatnot. Bray Wyatt unfortunately passed away at the age of 36. That was officially confirmed on August 24th, which was on Thursday, and it was due to a heart attack. And in particular, it was a heart attack that came off of complications from COVID. As many wrestling fans know, he ended up missing this year's WrestleMania, which he was in the middle of a feud with Bobby Lashley before going on medical hiatus in February due to contracting COVID-19. And obviously nobody knew, fans didn't know it was COVID-19 until he passed away a couple days ago, and it was then reported by someone close to the family that he had dealt with COVID-19 over the last several months. And it had appeared like he was on his way to making a comeback. But unfortunately, a matter of fact, they said he was like days away, if anything, from returning to the wrestling ring. However, unfortunately, he passed away at the age of 36. And in particular, I mean, I want to bring everybody back a few years to when Eddie Guerrero died in 2005 of a heart attack. And I believe he was actually a little bit older than Bray, I believe, because Bray was 36, and I believe Eddie Guerrero was 38, actually. Yeah, so he was like 2 years older than Bray Wyatt was. And he died of the same thing. Well, technically, acute heart failure is what he died of. He didn't die of a heart attack. He died of acute heart failure. But I remember being, this happened, of course, during the school year. I remember hearing the news of Eddie Guerrero passing away, who at the time was one of my favorite wrestlers. So being in junior high school, being in the eighth grade at that time, I remember just bawling my eyes out. And I got to tell you, Lou, hearing the news of Bray Wyatt all of a sudden passing away on Thursday, it kind of took me back to that time. It kind of took me back to that time because much like how Eddie was beloved by the fans, Bray Wyatt was one of the most creative geniuses of the modern era of professional wrestling.
Right.
I mean, some of the things he would come up with, after he failed as Husky Harris in his WWE debut, for a couple months he was Husky Harris. Then he was sent down to developmental, down to NXT when they were first starting up NXT. And they told him to come up with a new character. He ended up coming up with a cult leader called Bray Wyatt. Yes. And he had created what is known as the Wyatt family with Luke Harper, God rest his soul, Eric Rowan, who was at the tribute show that was filmed last night, and Braun Strowman. Eventually Braun Strowman would join a couple years later. Who was also at the tribute show, and the four of them were pretty damn tight. They were pretty close, screen, but also off screen. And I just find it very haunting that this is almost reminiscent of Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit.
Right.
Because Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit, I mean, it's two completely different scenarios, though.
Yeah. Sure.
Because Chris Benoit murdered his family and then killed himself. But the what's scary about it is the time difference, because it was 2 years apart that Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit passed away.
Right.
And it's 2 years apart here that Luke Harper a lot of people knew him as Brody Lee in AEW. Luke Harper and Bray Wyatt passed away 2 years apart. It's eerily scary to see that now literally half of the Wyatt family has already passed away.
Very shocking.
And there's been a whole bunch of tributes that have poured in for Bray Wyatt. And I, you know, I feel bad for Terry Funk because, I mean, obviously his career is to be celebrated as well, but yet his death gets overshadowed by Bray Wyatt's death because while Terry Funk got to live a long, healthy life, Bray Wyatt was taken from us at the age of 36.
It's younger than I am.
Almost like completely stolen from us, if you would.
Yes.
And also it's been documented as well that Bray has had mental health issues. So the first thing everybody was praying for was that he didn't take his own life. That when this news first came out, you know, the first thing everybody thought of was he may have taken his own life because he had been dealing with mental health issues over the last couple of years, eerily similar enough to Chris Benoit, except the difference is, you know, Chris Benoit had a history of God knows how many concussions, which ultimately ended up contributing to him going postal on his family and then killing himself. But nonetheless, you know, I contemplated whether or not to play Bray's music to start off the show tonight, but, you know, due to copyright reasons, I figured it would probably be best not to do it. But, I mean, this is a guy who basically paved the – well, I shouldn't say paved the way, but he has broken a barrier, basically, for current generation wrestlers. And he showed them that you can, as long if you can expand your mind, and you know you can come up with God knows how many creative things to put on the air for your product. And Bray Wyatt in general, along with, you know, Terry Funk had his accomplishments. Bray Wyatt, he had his as well. He was a multiple-time WWE and Universal Champion, winning the big belt, as we like to call it, three times. He was a two-time tag team champion as well. And he even won a award for Male Wrestler of the Year back in 2019, which was around, I believe it was around the last time that he had held the title, I think. But he was involved, actually, in multiple, he also had multiple accolades, Comeback Wrestler of the Year. He had Match of the Year versus John Cena back in 2014. He was involved in the Feud of the Year when a villainous professional wrestling stable called The Nexus, which Bray Wyatt was a part of the second version of it. He was part of that feud with Nexus versus the WWE. And also, he was ranked, I believe, as high as number 6 on the top 500 singles wrestlers in the PWI 500. For people who may not know, PWI stands for Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Kind of like Sports Illustrated, but it's specifically for wrestling.
Right. I knew that.
But Lou, I know there's one of your callers is a huge wrestling fan, Steve Davidson, and
yes, my co-host.
I know he was definitely stunned by everything that came out.
Yeah, that's why, you know, because he is the wrestling authority on the show, and you know, whenever I come across a wrestling article, especially something with this magnitude, you know, I let him have his take on it, you know, because he is the sort of like the wrestling authority, you know, of the show. It's just a shame that, you know, how a guy at such a young age. But, you know, with all the abuse that, you know, wrestlers take in the ring, you know, it doesn't come as much as a surprise to me because they do get injured and the body takes a beating. And, you know, that's what happens sometimes, you know, to these wrestlers. I mean, he's young in reality, but in wrestling, no. You know, that's when wrestlers start to, you know, wind down their career. But nevertheless, you know, it is a tragedy in the wrestling world and the sports world in general to have someone pass away so young.
Yeah, especially when you consider that, I mean, it's 36 years old, you know, usually wrestlers wrestle, if they're in good health, they can wrestle until their late 40s. Maybe, you know, like Ric Flair did into his mid-50s.
Well, that's a rare breed, you know, like Ric Flair and that. But most, I think by 35, because, you know, once someone hits 30, you know, the body does, you know, considering how much of a high athlete you are, the body seems to, you know, slow down a bit. I was going to say deteriorate, but that's being too harsh. Yeah, it doesn't slow down. You've reached your peak by then. And, you know, by 35,
right.
You know, it's the one that makes me having to retire.
Right, but technically, though, you could consider that Bray Wyatt was at the peak of his wrestling career. He was in the prime of his career. This is pretty much around that age, age of 36.
Mm-hmm.
He had been with the company since, I think it was since he officially signed with the company in 2009, but he didn't make his actual debut until 2010. So, you know, he had been with the company for 13, 14 years. And usually, you know, you don't see a lot of wrestlers stay with the company for a long time unless they're a draw. Unless they're like a legitimate draw, like you can make money off of them. And Bray, he was actually one of their top merchandise sellers because of his creativity, that he had sucked the fans. Like he used to say, one of his phrases was, he's got the whole world in his hands, meaning Bray Wyatt has the whole world in his hands, and he had the fans eating from the palm of his hands.
Yes.
I mean, he was just so captivating that I agree with what they said. There will never be another Bray Wyatt. I mean, they were originally making him to become the successor for The Undertaker with the whole supernatural element of his character. That he was going to be The Undertaker, basically, The Undertaker 2.0. And, of course, now that will never happen. But, I mean, I just got to tell you, this one's going to hurt for quite a while amongst wrestling fans of this current era.
Oh.
And also, you know, there were various stars who actually got tattoos of his logo last night, following last night's tribute show. They went out to a local tattoo parlor, and they ended up getting tattoos of his upside-down moth logo, which I thought was pretty cool. But anyways, we're going to move on, and...
Okay. Just got word, guys. 10:30. Yeah.
Oh, you gotta go at 10:30.
Yeah, little brother is needing me at 10:30.
All right. Well, you know what? While we're at it here, let me ask you: do you want to? You know, last week or last season, we did the games Gridiron. Do you want to be a part of that again?
Oh yeah, sure.
All right. Well, it's going to be the same thing as last year. I already got Alex's picks. He posted in the group, actually. So it's going to be the same thing as last year. We'll do six picks per week plus a Monday Night Football pick. So seven picks per week, technically. It'll start, I think, next week. Oh, wait, maybe it is next week it'll start.
Technically.
Like I did last season, I'll text you the spreads and everything. But I want to get your picks because we're doing preseason picks again this year for bonus points. Let's start with the national title. Who do you have competing for the national title this year?
Let's see. Well, I don't think it's going to be Georgia this year. I mean, it's kind of tough to do, three-peats, especially in this day and age. So,
right.
I don't look at that. I'm maybe going to take Ohio State and Ohio State versus Alabama.
And who do you have winning that?
The Ohio State.
Okay, so Ohio State, I will lock that in. And who do you have for the Super Bowl?
Well, let's see. I can tell you right now, I think maybe the Bills might be onto something this year, finally. I think maybe this is gonna be their year to make it, and I think Buffalo is going to take on. Buffalo taking on maybe the 49ers.
Okay, Buffalo versus San Francisco, and you have Buffalo.
Yeah. I have Buffalo. I think this is going to be the year.
All right, I'll lock those in officially. I'll get them submitted. And by the way, a little tidbit, the 49ers, they are in need of a kicker now.
Yeah.
They're in need of a kicker because both of their kickers are now injured thanks to yesterday's game. Their kicker, their rookie kicker, Jake Moody, is out with a quad strain. And their veteran kicker, Zane Gonzalez, had to leave with a calf injury.
Already?
So, do you think it's possible, especially with all the rumors about Nick Folk maybe getting booted from the Patriots, do you think it's possible San Francisco makes a call to New England to see what it would take for New England to give away Nick Folk?
Well, with that being said, I think it would be a very good possibility since they are in need of a kicker. So I'm not too crazy about who is going to be their backup. To Brock Purdy though. That's the only bad sign.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you one thing: Nick Folk, he can still kick despite his age. He can still kick, and he would actually serve as a pretty good stand-in for San Francisco until one of their two kickers returns.
Right, but I'm referring to who's going to be their number two quarterback, and it's going to be Sam Darnold. Oh boy, this is going to be fun.
All right, that's right. With San Francisco getting rid of Trey Lance,
to Dallas
for a fourth round pick. You know what? I don't know about you, Lou, or you, Diane, but I'm surprised that Dallas or that San Francisco even got a fourth-round pick for him.
Yeah. I'm just wondering how many ghosts he's going to see in the season. Oh, no. Oops, sorry.
Huh?
Yeah.
You're talking about ghosts with Sam Darnold.
Yes.
Because he's most infamous for during his time in with the New York Jets for what they called seeing ghosts out on the field,
yeah.
where he would randomly throw the ball in a direction that's nowhere near his receiver, and ultimately that would be him essentially seeing ghosts out on
yeah.
the field.
Okay.
I will admit, he has gotten better since his time in New York, but
true.
I am kind of surprised that he beat out Trey Lance, though.
Yeah.
So,
very surprising.
And now they've wanted, the thing is, the Cowboys have wanted a developmental quarterback for so many years. And now they finally get it with Trey Lance. And maybe that's why they gave up a fourth-round pick. Because, in all honesty, I mean, just looking at what Trey Lance's career has been like so far since he got drafted. And literally, there's practically nothing. He's played in like 8 games total since being drafted. 5 touchdowns, 3 picks, and he also has a rushing touchdown. But other than that, it's a 2-2 record. I don't know. It kind of seems to me like a fourth round pick was a little too steep.
Yeah, I would think so too.
I mean, let's get Alex is joining us. Alex, what are your thoughts on Trey Lance going for a fourth round pick?
Stuff, guys. I'm a little under the weather, so I'll hang in as long as I can. But, yeah, I mean, Trey Lance, he had, he was a really high draft choice. So, kind of unimpressive. I mean, he just didn't get a lot of opportunity. Then he got injured, like you said. And he hasn't really put a lot on tape. He hasn't played a lot in regular games. But Darnold is kind of similar, too. They were both kind of drafted really high and didn't pan out. But now I think it's good. Like you said, They want to, Dallas definitely wants someone to develop behind Dak. Just God forbid if anything happens to Dak, it's good to have someone else ready to go. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a low-risk move. Fourth rounder is a decent draft capital, though. So it's like they definitely give up something for him, but he's a good younger player to develop. I think it's a good move for Dallas.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like it's like I said on Lou's show earlier, you know, there are still good players that are taken in the fourth round. So it's It's kind of surprising that they gave up a fourth round pick for Lance, who hasn't proven yet that he can be an every game starter in the NFL.
Like maybe the reason they had to give up a fourth was just because it's such an important position because he's a quarterback and he had such a high draft equity. I mean, he was worth a lot apparently coming out. Everyone was really talking him up, saying he was going to be awesome. So, never panned out in San Fran. San Francisco also fell in love with Brock Purdy. So, it's like, you can't have – they only have room for one starter at quarterback. So, rather than sit on the bench. I mean, I think it was a good move overall. Because I think if Dallas hadn't given up a fourth, someone else would have. Because that could be – who knows, man.
Yeah.
He's still young. It's not like a lock or a guarantee or a given. But he could still be a starter for 5 or 7 or 8 years if he gets – if he gets a starting job this year or next year, if someone gets injured or something happens, they can force a pretty good, pretty good bounty, rent, whatever you want to say, a good amount to give up for him. Because he's a quarterback.
Well,
there
was a report that came out that Buffalo was in on Lance before, which I thought was kind of surprising. Why would they be in on Lance when they have Josh Allen? But the Cowboys outbid them by offering up a fourth round pick, which it seems kind of mind boggling to me a little bit that they would be in on Trey Lance when yet they have Josh Allen that at quarterback. And
yeah,
he's very rarely injured, if at all.
Yeah.
But I can kind of understand Dallas because maybe it kind of makes me wonder, does this mean that Dallas is planning to move on eventually from Dak Prescott?
It should.
I don't know. I think
it was in the funny moment.
Yeah, I mean, if they keep coming up short, man, you might. It's good to have.
Well, we want to get rid of Dak Prescott anyway.
Yeah, I would want a little bit more competition because I mean, I know, as an Eagles fan, I know it's always like I'm going to be looked at as like I'm being biased trying to slam the Cowboys, but I do show respect. They have a lot of talent, but seriously, I think a lot of people that aren't even a lot of Cowboys fans, you know, after a few more years, if Dak keeps falling short, it's time to move on. Are you going to wait? Are you going to wait until Dak Prescott's 40 years old? If he doesn't even get close to a Super Bowl. You're wasting a lot of other good Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb. Like, all those guys are getting old, working hard together. So I'd give Dak, like, this year and next year. There's only so many years you can wait. And then maybe, who knows, maybe Trey Lance. I mean, he was a top 10 pick. That's a higher pick than Dak was when he came out. So who knows? It might be a good insurance policy for them to have, just in case they do say, you know what, we have a lot of talent, Dak's good, but maybe Trey Lance could be great. I don't know. He's got a lot of talent.
Also, another thing, Alex, I asked Lou about this, too. What do you think about the Niners' kicking situation? Because both of their kickers are injured, and with the rumor going around that New England might be shop or might potentially go with Chad Ryland as their new kicker, do you think maybe perhaps San Francisco might give New England a call before cutting day about Nick Foles?
Yeah, he's a really good kicker. I could see that happening for sure. There's still a lot of things that can happen between now and even the first couple of weeks. You guys know that. So, you know, some of these players like Trey Lance, you know, they're not going to sit on the bench for more years. So there's still going to be more activity. I didn't realize that San Fran's missing both kickers now.
Yep, because their rookie kicker went out with a quad strain, and Zane Gonzalez, their veteran kicker, went out yesterday with some sort of injury. So both are expected to miss multiple weeks start the season.
Wow. That's one of those spots, too. It's like, people don't put enough importance into it, and then it's like if you put someone who can't field in the outfield, the baseball will find that guy in right field right away, like in the worst, like in the biggest pressure spot. So, like, if you go into the season without a good kicker, they might be tied with a minute left in their week one. They might lose if they have a bad kicker. So, yeah, they have to get that addressed immediately. You don't want to mess around with a kicker. Some people don't think they're important. They're absolutely important.
I mean, the only other name available out there, unless Robbie Gould wants to come out of retirement, the only other kicker out there is like Rodrigo Blankenship. And Blankenship has been spotty, if anything, ever since he got released by Indianapolis.
Yeah, so if they made a move for a kicker, you'd think maybe like a sixth rounder or a seventh rounder. I mean, you know, not going to get the same capital as a quarterback, but very important position. Yeah, I'm sure they're talking right now over the weekend about it. They need to find someone.
Yeah. By the way, we do have a little bit of breaking news here. It looks like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be looking for a center as their top center, Ryan Jensen, has been placed on season-ending injury reserve thanks to complications from the knee injury that robbed him of nearly all of last season. And the injury is so significant that Ryan Jensen may have likely played his last down in the NFL.
Wow. And Tampa Bay is pretty rattled with injuries. I mean, that was from what I saw. I mean, that's a big reason why Brady was struggled so bad last year. He was getting crushed every play. That's not good news in Tampa.
Yeah, and it's even worse because their general manager had signed him to a 3-year, $39 million extension before the 2022 season. So
wow, $39 million. He's already injured. Still collecting
yeah,
that money.
Yeah, all of that and. All of that, and they got only one playoff game out of them. This is a guy who was one of the top centers for quite a few years in the NFL, and now it sounds like his career may be over because of this.
Yeah.
Because
wow.
he elected to not have surgery last season. And he somehow played in their playoff game, and
wow.
now he hasn't fully recovered from that knee injury, and he has now been placed on season-ending injured reserve.
Oh my God! So if he might get an attorney or two or three and file some sort of lawsuit, because if he put off surgery, if he can prove that his employer. Buccaneers didn't want him to have surgery. You know what I mean? I don't mean to sound like devil's advocate, but
they recommended it.
Oh, then he can't sue his team. Then I mean, then he can't do that. He did it on his own.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, that's on him. Then sadly, hope he can come back.
He had an injured MCL plus or not MCL an injured ACL plus ligament tears. And he decided to play through it.
And he played in a professional game, and he weighs over 300 pounds. That's a lot of weight. Yeah. Man, that would be awful if his career's done. Hope he can come back.
Yeah, now at the age of 32, his career may be over officially.
Wow.
That's tough. Bad enough they lose Brady. I know he was getting a little slower, but still Brady. But now they don't have Brady,
right.
And now they're losing guys like that. You're already waking up looking at Baker Mayfield as your starting quarterback.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Already waking up like a dream or a nightmare. And then you lose your best lineman right away, and we haven't even kicked off yet.
Exactly. It's like, yikes. Like, literally, you already have Baker Mayfield. Now, I don't know who their backup center is, but Mayfield's in a lot of trouble. If he's the starter this year, he's in a lot of trouble.
I'll say.
Yeah, and he takes chances. And you guys know Baker. He's just like a gunslinger. He'll run around and get his clock, wrong, and then he'll hold on to the ball too long and get nailed by someone. He's got to have a good line in place in front of him because he's not going to just, throw the ball away. He'll get murdered back there without a good line.
Murdered.
And he has to jump up to see over it half the time.
Right.
Not that he's short in real life, but, he's not a towering guy as an NFL quarterback. Yeah, that's the Bucs.
Right.
I could see the Bucs literally being bottom five. And they were really good. I know Brady was a big part, but, I mean, look at they have two, Hall of Fame receivers, Godwin and Mike Evans. Now they're going to be a terrible team. It's really ridiculous, actually. They still have a lot of talent. It's like, I guess they're going to stink. Kind of, whatever. It's going to be tough for the Bucs fans. Kind of rebuild.
Also, sticking with the NFL, by the way, some good news for Jets fans. Aaron Rodgers made his debut today, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did. Surprise,
he looks pretty good. I think he went 5 of 8 for 47 yards and a touchdown throw, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't see it. The stats
came down with the win too.
Did you guys watch it? Did you guys watch it at all? I didn't watch it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he had a pretty good sky pass for 14 yards to Garrett Wilson in the end zone.
Garrett Wilson's going to be top two or three receiver, I think. Dude, if Breece Hall is healthy, that's a great running back coming up and awesome defense. I know I'm beating the dead horse, but, I mean, Rodgers plays really well and stays healthy, man. They could be a really good team. I know it's going to be just for a few years while he's around, but, man, yeah, they got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent. They're not going to be scared of anyone. Whoever they're playing this year, they're not going to be scared, that's for sure. As long as Rodgers is.
No.
And they have a heck of a lot of – they have a lot of young talent. It's a really, really unique mix. It's the old Hall of Fame quarterback, you know, kind of looking for, like, revenge or retribution, trying to prove that he's not washed up, and he's leading a bunch of young guys in New York. It's going to be fun.
Right. So, yeah, Lou, I was wrong. It wasn't a full half like I thought it would be. Whoever on your show said two series was right. Because that's what it ultimately ended up being, was two series that he played.
I didn't think it was going to go that far. You know, really, I mean, they're saving for opening day. So I really didn't see the point of him going, you know, to two halves. That's pushing it.
It just get a little used
to,
like, the game action. He doesn't need any reps, you know. He just likes to get his feet wet with his new teammates, really.
Yeah.
Like Lou said, I mean, imagine if he, you know, stepped on someone falling down and broke his ankle and he's out 2 months. I mean, that would be catastrophic.
Yeah.
You got to keep that guy protected.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, this would obviously mean that, you know, taking him out like they did would essentially prevent him from potentially committing any sort of injury.
Yeah.
But for the rest of the group, Zach Wilson didn't do too bad. 11 of 18, 107 yards. Tim Boyle pretty much did the same, but he went 9 of 11 with two touchdowns. As far as receivers go, Garrett Wilson, three catches for 30 yards, including that touchdown. Alex Erickson had 5 catches for 38 yards and 2 touchdown catches. Xavier Gibson had 7 catches for 79 yards, no touchdowns on there. And Mecole Hardman, you know, this is how you can tell when certain people have made the team and when certain people are vying to have one of those last spots on the team. Because you see people like CJ Uzoma he was only targeted once this game. Hardman was only targeted like 3 times. Garrett Wilson was targeted 3 times. And even in the run game, I mean, you didn't even see Hall play once today.
Wow. Guys, did Dalvin Cook play at all?
Nope.
Wow, that's protecting both, I guess. Well, I mean, obviously Hall's coming off that really bad knee injury. But, I mean, damn. I mean, two top 10 running backs, too? I mean, they're loaded. They got to stay healthy, the Jets game.
Well, to be fair, going with the Dalvin Cook thing, Ezekiel Elliott didn't play either last night for New England. So, I think what New York is doing is basically they're letting him just get his reps in during practice. Elliott actually dressed last night, and he was out there on the field during warmups, but he just didn't play. But that's a whole entire different thing in general. Last night, fucking Bailey Zappe. You know, I can't understand how there was so much hype around this kid last year, and then we see what he's been like this preseason, and it's almost like he completely forgot how to play quarterback. Like, literally, the very first snap he takes, one Tennessee lineman almost sacks him. He goes running to the left, then he comes running back to the right, and the Tennessee lineman that almost sacked him then strip sacks him, and Tennessee runs it for I think they ended up getting first and goal, but somehow New England's defense ended up holding them to just a field goal after that. But it's fucking mind-boggling how people want Bailey Zappi over Mac Jones after that performance last night.
Yeah, it sounds like they got to go with Mac, man. Mac or bust.
Right. Like, I don't care if Mac Jones. Yeah, I don't care if Mac Jones sucks to high heaven this year. I would rather have Jones play all 17 games than have Bailey Zappi play a single game after last night's game. That's how bad it was. It's like he's completely lost all of his football instincts and everything after after this preseason.
No, that's a problem. Yeah, definitely is. Time to go to battle.
But, you know, going back to what I was saying when it comes to the difference between who made the team and who actually needs reps to try and potentially make the team, Kayshon Boutte, who has been picking up steam in New England in recent weeks, and there was a question of whether or not he might be on the bubble. He only played 5 minutes last night, the first offensive series. He didn't even have a pass thrown to him. He just played 5 minutes, and he wasn't injured or anything. That right there tells me that Belichick saw enough out of him from that second preseason game against Green Bay, where he had a touchdown on like 70 yards or so. That right there shows me that Belichick saw all he needed to see to give him a spot on the team.
Yeah.
And also, DeMario Douglas didn't even play either, which tells me that even though DeMario Douglas has barely seen game action this preseason, he has made the team because of everything that he did during camp. But meanwhile, you have players out there. I mean, this was offensively, this was a bona fide backup game where there was nothing but backups out there offensively.
Right.
Like Pierre Strong, Kevin Harris, and J.J. Taylor all vying for that last running back spot. I don't know why, but they, for some reason, New England kept switching between Zappi, McSorley, and Cunningham. And then, for some reason, they decided to just go back to Zappi for the remainder of the game. I think Bill O'Brien lost his voice last night from yelling at the offense. Literally. Like, his face was beat red the last time we saw him on camera.
Yeah, it wasn't a happy camper.
No. Also from last night's game, I can tell you that, in my opinion, I believe Calvin Munson, with the work that he did defensively, he probably won himself a spot. I think Ronnie Perkins, after he puked on the defensive line, he won himself a spot after puking. He literally got the tackle the very next play that was called. Defensively, there was only a few regular starters out there, like Jack Jones played. Jack Jones played, Josh Uche, Mac Wilson, but there were a lot of them that didn't really do. Even though they were out there, they didn't really do much. So it wasn't. Like, Belichick pretty much has all of his starters nailed down when it comes to who's going to be starting this year. They did lose Riley Reiff, their right guard, to an injury, so there's kind of a question mark there as to what's going to happen with the offensive line. And also, the kicking game is also in question as well, because Chad Ryland played all of the game last night. So the question is Nick Folk on the roster? Is Chad Ryland on the roster? Are they going to keep both on the roster? There's a lot of questions surrounding New England still, even after last night's debacle. But
yeah, uncertainty in the air, right? I mean, There's a lot of things going on. I mean, New England, I think, still has a chance to be good this year, but they have a lot of questions that need to be answered. I think Mac, it's just not really a shocking theory, but it's going to really be just so important for Mac Jones to have a good year. If they're going to have a good year, he's got to really be playing well. He's got the pedigree from Alabama, you know, so it's like
right.
He's capable. I hope that, you know, as long as the coaching's good, I mean, could have a good year. But, I mean, that's a big could. I mean, he's the quarterback. They really need him to step up. It's now or never for him.
Right.
Right. Well, the problem is that they need to release Mac. And by releasing, I don't mean remove him from the roster. I mean, they need to let him loose. They need to stop being cutesy with him with the different play calls that they do and just let him have a chance at slinging the ball, which is what
Absolutely.
He was best at Alabama.
Yeah. And I meant to say it was just so important too. You know, it wasn't his mistakes. I don't think he did much wrong in his first, his experience so far as a Patriot. We've said it before on the show and said it on Lou's show. Everyone, you know, a lot of sports people have talked about it and seen what's happened. You know, he's been mismanaged. He's been miscoached. So it's not his fault, but like now, hopefully the coaches really have their together and put him in their best chance to succeed.
Right.
He deserves it. Because if they keep screwing around, dicking around with him, and they win six, seven, eight games, and then they want to get rid of him, I could still see him being a good quarterback somewhere else. So it's like, you know, it's just so much, I think it's on the coaches this year. Which you guys have said before. I'm not saying anything new, but I mean, it's a big year for Mac. Hopefully, like you said, hopefully they let him play and, you know, they don't, you know, draw straws and say, oh, this weekend you can call plays. Next weekend someone else will call plays. I mean, it was a clown show the way they were handling him so far. They got to get everything together.
Right.
They got to put him in a good chance to succeed. I think he could be a playoff quarterback.
What do you think, Lou, about Mac's chances this year with an actual offensive coordinator in Bill O'Brien?
I think like I said, that's a clown show, and I think that's what we're going to get. So I don't think it's going to make much of a difference.
You don't think the addition of Bill O'Brien will make much of a difference?
Well. Maybe a little. Too soon to tell right now. I mean, it's Bill O'Brien after all.
Yeah, but don't forget, Bill O'Brien was also the offensive coordinator for Alabama last year.
That's true too.
So if Bill O'Brien goes back to the Alabama style way of playing, which is what Mac is used to, Mac could potentially have quite a, you know, he could have a potential breakthrough year.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they have a guy from his alma mater. They have Alabama that looks like they're getting their coaching act together.
Yeah.
If the light's going to turn on for Mac, this is the year.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Daniel Carlson just kicked one from 62 yards. Right
Cyborg.
Down the middle.
Murder leg.
62 yards against Dallas, right down the middle to end the half.
Wow.
Good God.
Yeah.
And from the looks of it, he had plenty of room. He could have kicked it from longer, potentially. It wasn't like a kick that just barely made it. Wow.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry. I saw it just go across my Twitter timeline just now, so I had to look at it.
Uh-huh.
Now, we're going to go back to football in just a minute, but I do want to bring up something that came up following the Women's World Cup, where we saw Spain defeat England 1-0 to officially claim their first World Cup in Women's World Cup history for Team Spain. However, it did not come without controversy. In particular, the president of Spain's Soccer Federation, Luis Rubiales, has been suspended for 90 days after kissing Jenny Hermoso of the Spanish national team. And he first kissed her on the cheek, and then he kissed her on the lips while they were celebrating. Hermoso has come out saying that she did not consent to the kiss, and the team's players have also said that they won't play any more games as long as Rubiales is in charge.
Oh,
and
boy.
To top it all off, Rubiales is, I mean, he's not just the president of Team Spain, but he is also the vice president of the UEFA, which is the union for all of the different European leagues.
Big trouble, double trouble.
I mean, and now he has said that he will refuse to resign. And also, not to mention, not only did he kiss her, but also he did numerous forms of misconduct by grabbing his crotch, among other things, which has basically overshadowed the entire accomplishment for Team Spain of winning their first ever World Cup title.
He is
still facing pressure from not only his team, not only all of the other soccer clubs in Spain and soccer officials in Spain, but he is also facing pressure from the Spanish government to resign as well.
Wow, that's nuts.
And not just that, but also there have been multiple women's stars in soccer who stand with Hermoso amidst this whole entire ordeal. So, I mean, let's start off with you, Lou. What are your thoughts on the, in my opinion, deplorable conduct by Luis Rubiales?
What a dick. I mean, you know, we've seen this though before, of course, of that. I mean, you know, I first thought, you know, it was caught up in the moment, you know, I would get that, you know, but he went over too far, and was kissing on the lips, and, you know, saying he said no. So, you know, he's the one in the wrongdoing of this. I mean, it's not the first time we've seen this, though, with a women's championship soccer team, as opposed to a Brandi Chastain in 1999, ripping off her shirt, after the U.S. won the World Cup. But this goes beyond that. This was just, you know, professionalism at that. You know, kissing on the lips, you know, a player, no, that was totally inexcusable. So I think 90 days, yeah, that's going to be appropriate punishment. I would have said 20 years to life in prison, but, you know, I think 90 days is punishment enough for a schmuck like that. What the hell were you thinking? Just another example of what power can do.
Yeah, exactly. The fact that I think it should be more than 90 days, to be perfectly honest. I think he should be forced to basically resign because as the president, you're representing all of Spain. You're representing you're representing your country.
Yeah.
As the head of their soccer team, and to basically, I mean, I understand it was during the celebration and whatnot, and I know I forget if it's Spain or Italy that's normally known for kissing during celebrations
Probably Italy,
but it might be Italy.
I agree with Lou, but
sure.
Like, I think Lou nailed it on the head, but, like, yeah, that's one thing that would give me a little pause. Like, I don't know if that's customary. Doesn't sound like it, but, I mean, some places in Europe and worldwide, it still seems like a reach, so I don't know if I'm saying anything correct. It still seems like it's pretty outrageous. I don't think there's any tradition where you can kiss a player like that. So, yeah, I mean, 90 days is not enough. That's a pretty outrageous story.
It shouldn't even be 90 days. He should just flat out resign, period.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree. That's outrageous.
I mean, I guarantee you.
What are you thinking doing that?
If it was any other sport, I guarantee you, you would see a resignation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I have to watch the replays of that, too. I was busy a couple of days, and I'm feeling like crap the past couple of days more recently. So I haven't really been on the up and up with keeping up like that type of story. I don't know much about, so I don't want to misquote anyone. But, yeah, I got to look at that more. I mean, so it was it after game? When was what was the setting? When did you do this?
After the game.
It was, like, literally right after they won.
Wow. And did the player react or her like, teammates and other people reacted?
I don't know exactly in particular, but I do know that – hang on. I have the video actually right here. I'm going to rewatch it. So what he's doing, he's hugging her, then he kisses her on the mouth, and then I believe it looks like he slaps her ass too. As she's walking away.
That's
going
too far.
The story's not getting any better. It's getting worse and worse, the story, as it goes along. that next part is even more ludicrous.
He's grabbed from the ass, and he is an ass. Isn't that something?
That goes to me wanting to watch it, like, skeptically, like, not thinking it's going to be good. I don't even need to watch it. That sounds awful.
Hang on, Alex. I got it for you.
It's a little peckish.
I got it for you. Now, granted, it's poor quality, but literally, okay. So he doesn't even actually go for the cheek. He goes straight for the mouth.
Wow. Yeah, watching it right now. That's nuts.
And it looks like he smacks her on the ass at the end.
No, slapped her on the back. And again, I'm not this guy's.
Oh, was it on the back?
Not Johnny Cochran. I'm not his. Definitely not his defense attorney. He seems like a scuzzbag, but definitely on the back. Look at slapped her on the back. Lower part of the back.
Oh, okay.
Probably shouldn't have, but the kiss is awful. And it's just awkward and unprofessional for her. How is she supposed to react to that on a world stage, too? She can't really do anything in response.
Right.
That she's like the man. Like power and authority. You know, he's the president. So it's like, what is she going to do, start screaming at him on stage and then, you know, jeopardize her career or just, you know, who knows? She's kind of like defenseless.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
And she has firmly stated that it was not consensual, that despite him claiming that the kiss was consensual. She has said that the kiss was not consensual. She released a statement, actually, which she claims that she was forced to release the statement by the Federation, by the Soccer Federation. She says, after achieving one of the most important objectives of my sports career and after a few days of reflection, I want to sincerely thank my teammates, fans, followers, media, and everyone who has made this dream come true. Yada, yada, yada. Sadly, the ability to celebrate that has been cut short. While it is true that I do not want to interfere with the multiple ongoing legal processes, I feel obliged to report that Mr. Luis Rubiales' words explaining the unfortunate incident are categorically false and part of the manipulative culture that he himself has generated. I want to make it clear that at no time did the conversation to which he referred to in his address take place, and above all, was his kiss ever consensual? I want to reiterate, as I did before, that I did not like this incident. And she also continues.
She spoke up. Yeah, then he should be in deep trouble. I didn't know she was so against it and so appalled. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, she also said, I feel the need to report this incident because I believe that no person in any work, sports, or social setting should be a victim of these types of non-consensual behaviors. I felt vulnerable and a victim of an impulse-driven, sexist, out-of-place act without any consent on my part. Simply put, I was not respected.
Wow.
And also, she firmly claims that she was asked to make a joint statement to alleviate the pressure on the president. Basically. So she basically admits that they wanted her to release a joint statement with him saying that it was consensual and everything. And
believe that.
Also, it says here that the RFEF, whatever that abbreviation is, has pressured my surroundings, being family, friends, teammates, etc., to give a testimony that had little or nothing to do with my feelings. So basically, they're trying to get everybody, they're trying to play damage control by using people around her. Honestly, this is just disgusting.
It is.
This is disgusting from Team the higher ups of Team Spain, and from Luis Rubiales himself.
Yeah, I mean, he should be called on to resign. That's
he needs
not
to resign.
Yeah, absolutely. She feels violated on a world stage when he does that to her. That's egregious. It's terrible behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it was anybody else, they would have already resigned. If it was anybody else in any other sport, they would have already resigned.
Absolutely, I agree.
But regardless, now, because of that, Team Spain has refused to play until he steps down or is removed from representing Spain. Also, staying in the world of soccer for a minute here, Chelsea has agreed to terms with the New England Revolution on a transfer involving their all-star goalkeeper, Georgi Petrovic, on a 16 million euro or pounds, I forget which one it was, but on a 16 million transfer, which I think this may actually be higher. I think this may be higher than what Matt Turner went for when he went to Arsenal.
Dude. Wow.
Right in the middle of New England's attempt to compete for the MLS Cup, now New England has lost their second top goalkeeper in the last couple of years.
You mentioned that during the week. That's brutal. I know it's an awesome, reputable, worldwide. You know, people love soccer. I get that. That's one rule I just don't like. Is that it's almost like NBA with Harden and Durant, that shit they pull, but I know it's different, but
yeah,
the transfer stuff is tough. You know, it's like so random. It just happens, and it can really deflate a team. And they lost both their goals, and that's massive. Sucks.
Yeah, Matt Turner, they lost Matt Turner, was it last year? Hang on. They lost Matt Turner. Yeah, it might have been last. No, they lost him last year at the end of 2012, not 2012. In the middle of 2022, they lost him to Arsenal, where he went on to be their backup goalkeeper. His transfer fee was $6 million that could rise up to $10 million. Petrovic went for more.
Wow.
And actually, it's not exactly
yeah.
$16 million. It's not exactly $16 million. It ranges. There's some reports that are saying 14, some are saying 17, some are saying 16. It's all over the place. But regardless, it's more than what Turner went for. And Turner isn't even with Arsenal anymore. Now he signed with Nottingham Forest on a 4-year deal for £10 million. So
they can just poach like some players, and then they can poach a player and like really mess with a team's chemistry. And then a year later, the guy is not even with their team anymore. That just sucks. Sucks to go through that.
Yeah, you know, it's just, I mean, I understand that obviously the major goal is to get to the Premier League, which, if
yeah.
anything, that just makes New England look more, it makes them look more, how should I put this, attractive for certain players
yeah, I agree.
That to sign with because, I mean, the past 2 years, we've seen our top two goalkeepers go to, who, by the way, both of them were all-stars for MLS as well. We've seen them both go over to the Premier League in back-to-back years. So
shows that they're getting really good talent. Like, other players and other people who run franchises and obviously fans are like, wow, New England's legit. Look, these people keep knocking on their door, kicking their top players away. They must be doing something right.
Right.
It really makes it tough for New England to keep chugging along, especially goalies, back-to-back goalies. That's a tough blow to withstand.
Yep. Back-to-back goalies, and he's considered to be one of the top goalkeepers in Major League Soccer this year, too, Petrovic.
That one stinks.
So yeah, it definitely it's definitely a big blow. The fact that now they replaced Petrovic with Earl Edwards Jr., which I mean, let's be perfectly honest. I've seen him play in person. He's nowhere close to Petrovic. Not even close.
Not
so,
driving. It's not a NASCAR name. Earl Edwards. Jeez, Petrovic had a better soccer ring to it to me. But yeah, no, I
yeah.
heard he's not a. He's not exactly a stalwart in the net.
It's definitely.
Can they sign anyone else right now? Or are they like stuck with this back of this third stringer now? Or can they sign anyone else immediately? They can still get someone else.
Nope, because the transfer window has officially closed.
Oh, that's just brutal.
If they can sign anybody, what they can do is they can sign. What do they call them? They can sign next generation contracts, and what that means is like for their minor league affiliate, basically, the New England Revolution 2 team, which is like for players under 19, like if they're 18 or 17 years old or whatever, they can sign those type of players, but
okay.
they can't. So they can sign them to like homegrown contracts, but they can't sign. They can't like say somebody wants to go from the Premier League to Major League Soccer, and they decided to, want to sign with New England Revolution. They'll have to wait until the next transfer window, which is after the season is over.
Wow. Tough. It's really tough for them. If you couldn't pick any other team, it's bad enough to get poached once, but you go back-to-back goalkeepers? Come on.
Well, Chelsea was that desperate for a backup goal, for to find a replacement.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's where Petrovic... I mean, obviously, Petrovic was at the top of the list when it comes to you know, when it comes to searching for goalkeepers. So,
yeah,
kind of the same thing with Turner. And if anything, they can actually put that money to good use, potentially, depending on what they decide to do. I know, if I remember correctly, they used the money they got from Turner to get Giacomo Brioni, I think, who has been used off and on as their striker. But because Gustavo Boe is their main striker and one of the best strikers in Major League Soccer right now, when he's not injured, that is, they decided not to, you know, they've basically been platooning the both of them, essentially.
Gotcha. Okay.
But anyways, going over to, well, actually, hang on, let me get rid of this story because we already covered that.
Right.
Going back to the NFL, we do have a couple of retirements to talk about. Miles Jack has officially retired from the NFL after 7 seasons in the league.
Yep, injury.
And
that'll do it.
I believe he has sort of the same condition that that Sony Michel had, where he has a knee to knee or bone to bone condition.
Oh, that's right, Michel. Yeah, I forgot about him, man. Number one pick, Patriots. Yeah. Yes, played like 2 or 3 years only. That sucks. Yeah, Jack was a really highly sought after player, and second rounder, played well for Jacksonville, and now he's out of the league. What is he, 27, 28 years old?
27, I think.
Tough. Wow. Yeah, injuries will get you. That's tougher, huh?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because he was a decorated college player who ended up falling to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the second round of the 2016 draft. He was a pretty good player for Jacksonville, but all of a sudden, once he left Jacksonville, everything just started to fall apart for him. But it is possible that he could change his mind. He could change his mind to come out of retirement and become part of the workout circuit for the NFL when they need like a replacement player or whatnot. But it's still a pretty big loss for Philly in terms of what might have been if he was able, because now Philly, I believe, needs to fill that void in their linebacking core now.
They have N'Kobe Dean as the leader of one of the leaders from the Georgia Bulldogs. He's smaller. He didn't play a lot last year because he was injured, but he's playing middle linebacker for the Eagles. And then they have a couple other guys that are pretty promising. Zach Cunningham is another linebacker that they brought in. But, yeah, it's definitely everyone – I know, as an Eagles fan, I mean, but they do have a lot of talent. But, yeah, I mean, linebacker is kind of a weaker position for them. So, yeah, it definitely hurts. I mean, he had a really good background, too. But those knee injuries are no joke. Like you said, though, Steve, I mean, he might be able to – he might be eventually be able to come back. But right now he can't play.
Right. Also, another player who can't play and ended up retiring, Corey Davis, officially retired from the NFL after 6 seasons. Jets head coach Robert Saleh had said earlier this week that he was at risk of missing week 1 against the Bills, but he wouldn't get into specifics. So now the number 5 overall pick of the 2017 NFL draft appears ready to call it quits after 6 seasons in the league. He posted a career-high 984 yards and 5 touchdowns in 2020 back with the – I think he was with the Tennessee Titans, wasn't he, back then? And he ended up being a solid second receiver for the Jets over his two seasons with them. But now, with his retirement, that means that Alan Lazard is firmly in the number two role for Jets wide receivers, and also makes him a low-end number three wideout option, potentially, for Aaron Rodgers. But Corey Davis, that's another guy who had so much promise, you know, especially when he broke through with Tennessee. And then all of a sudden, it's almost like once he came down with injury, he started to deteriorate. He had a total of 6 touchdowns through 2 years with the Jets.
Oh, that's tough, man. Yeah. Let's think about it. These guys are, like, going so fast and getting hit by big people. I mean, the collisions, the daily wear and tear on their bodies. Once they have a really bad knee problem, there's no way for it to get better because they're constantly out there. You know, it's like you can't really hide it or protect it. You're going to hit and get hit, and it's not going to get any better, these knees.
So,
yeah, it's unfortunate. But, I mean, you know, retirements do happen. So, this basically, I mean, it says he's stepping away from football, so maybe perhaps he may decide to unretire at some point, whenever that might be.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe come back.
I would assume he's probably still, if he were to come back this season, I believe he would still be under contract with the Jets. So,
and but,
I don't know,
I mean,
maybe perhaps.
Hopefully he could play again. It's just, I mean, but then look at the Jets. Hardman, Garrett Wilson, Lazard. Cool. Randall Cobb. I mean, Aaron Rodgers brought half the Green Bay Packers with him. But, I mean, maybe he can come back, too. He was good, too.
Elsewhere around the league, Cowboys edge rusher Sam Williams was arrested last Sunday on charges of possessing a controlled substance and unlawful carrying of a weapon. And this is a guy who was a major contributor to the pass rush last year. It says that he could face a misdemeanor charge for the weapon he had when he was arrested in Frisco City. And he could face a suspension later this season, depending on the outcome of his case. And, I mean, it would be a pretty big loss for the Cowboys, considering he had 10 tackles for loss last year and 9 quarterback hits last season.
Wow.
I mean, what are your thoughts, Lou, on this? I know you're a Cowboys fan. I mean, how big of a loss would this be for Dallas's pass rush?
It would send them back quite a while. I mean, that's all we need, you know. First, he was one of our great – he was a former players and now this. I mean, it's just – the bleeding, you know, is just continuing on. It would send a major blow back to their rushing, you know, over a stupid stunt like that. Just unreal. All right, so but hopefully I'll be back with the normal time next week. I hope.
All right, Lou. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. We'll see you next week.
See you, Lou.
You guys. Thanks, Bose.
Okay.
All right. Now our next little bit here. The Raiders won't have to worry about their holdout star running back anymore because Josh Jacobs has officially agreed to a 1-year, $12 million deal, which is basically a $2 million increase from the franchise tag. And now he has 15 days to get ready for week one after missing the entire preseason due to a holdout.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know why they're kind of toying around with him. He's a really good player, but Raiders are going to do Raider things, I guess. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think he's a really good player. So now he's going to, I guess, begrudgingly suit up and probably have an awesome year and then try to leave as soon as possible after it.
Possibly, yeah.
Bet on himself, but...
Exactly. You know, there was talk
the old adage.
That...
the old saying, I guess.
Yeah, there was talk that he originally wanted to be traded, actually. And they wouldn't accommodate his request, basically. So that's why he ended up holding out originally, because he wouldn't sign the franchise tag.
Wow. I just never know. They just keep – I don't know. I don't know if Devontae Adams is happy. I guess he's leaving. It's just whenever the same stuff happens with certain teams, you get a little skeptical. Are they doing things the right way out in Vegas now? Because, I mean, you want to keep your best players happy. It's a pretty simple way to operate if you're, like, a sports team or a good company anywhere, right? And
right.
This isn't the first time they've gone through this. Like, they just keep I don't know, mistreating, giving someone $14 million, but you understand, you get what I'm saying. Like, they've had problems through the years.
Exactly.
Keeping their best players happy.
Yeah, I know there's always something with them,
with someone.
Right. Like, I know they've had problems in previous years when it comes to certain players and whatnot, but it kind of seems like this current management is looking to basically tear down the Raiders from the previous regime so that they can put in their own players, essentially, which is why you don't see Derek Carr there anymore. I'm surprised that Josh Jacobs is kind of forced, because I don't think he's been in the league long enough to warrant free agency yet. So basically he was kind of forced to after they franchise tagged him. And he hasn't shown any willingness for any sort of new contract whatsoever either. So
yeah, he was part of that. What
chances
they have, like,
are
with Mayock and Gruden when they first came in. Remember they have three like number one picks, and two of them were like played for like a year and left or got cut.
Right.
I think one of them is out of the league, and Jacobs is the other guy, and now he's probably one more year and done. Just brutal.
Right.
Mayock is like the guru, draft guru apparently. But yeah, Raiders are gonna Raider, I guess.
Yeah. Elsewhere, the Broncos have some pretty bad news for their wide receiver core, considering the fact that I believe they already don't have Patrick, and now they've lost Jalen Virgil with a torn meniscus, so he is out for the season. And now Jerry Jeudy has gone down with a hamstring injury. So he is expected to miss several weeks, and while there is optimism that it's nothing long-term, his status for the beginning of the season has now been put in serious jeopardy due to this injury.
Wow.
So now that means that Marvin Mims and Cortland Sutton will be the top two wide receivers, with Kendall Hinton replacing Jeudy in the slot.
Man.
Of that Broncos team.
I called him for a quick few minutes on Lou's show earlier, but he mentioned the injuries, and then we don't even know if Russell Wilson can ever look close to what he used to be. Like this, Sean Payton, you know, Mr. Cocky himself. Let's see how they do in Denver this year. They're losing receivers, like flies now. I don't even know how good Russell's going to be. So, yeah, but it's not good to lose most of your weapons already.
Yeah, and they don't have they have Jarrett Stidham as their backup out there in Denver. And he got injured tonight, too, I believe. So, I don't know if he's still playing, actually. I know they're killing the Rams right now leading into the half. But I know he went down with an injury, as far as I remember.
Wow.
But, yeah, there's a lot of uncertainty in Denver, especially with, I mean, even if you have one of the top head coaches of the past couple of decades as your new head coach, we're going to need a lot more than just,
The division just loaded.
You're
going to
need a lot more than a new head coach.
Yeah, he's not going to suit up. Russell Wilson has to act like hasn't totally forgot how to play quarterback. But, yeah, and then all these injuries, I don't know. Never want to say it's karma, but it's like, I don't know, it was weird. That was a weird trade. And then Sean Payton comes in and totally slams the old head coach and throws everyone under the bus. And now everyone's getting injured. Crazy times in Denver.
Oh, no, Stidham is still in there, actually. On NFL, they're playing on NFL Network right now. He's still in there.
Oh, okay.
So Stidham has actually looked pretty good today. So, I mean, if Denver needs to go to a backup, let's not forget, Stidham did learn from the best. He did play behind Brady.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot that. Yeah, that's big. It's just imagine that division, though, with some injured receivers and then Stidham. I mean, if Russell goes down, I don't even know how good Russell is anymore, though. It's just a confusing team. They might win 4 games. They might improve and win 10 games. I don't know. The division is just so loaded. I can't see them really doing that well either way.
No, but hey. No, I agree with you. I don't really see them doing too well. In that, especially with that division,
it's just such a tough. I'm sort of surprised that Sean Payton went there, because everyone always holds him to some pedestal, like he's the man. And then he goes. It looks,
right.
To me, it looks like washed up Russell Wilson, who's kind of got like attitude, like kind of a diva. I don't know. That's just from what I can take of it. And then you're going up against Mahomes and Justin Herbert. It's like good luck. He could have found an easier place to land. Sean Payton, he's going against a really murderer's row every week, it seems like. Good luck, Sean. Yeah, while he's trashing other coaches right as soon as he arrives. Jeez.
I think he's a good enough backup, though, to where if they need to replace Russell Wilson with him, they could.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, it comes from learning from the best. So he's definitely got some good.
Yeah,
experience.
And he did start a couple of games last year for Vegas too. So,
oh, that's right. I didn't even.
There
remember.
Is
yeah,
that.
Right. Yep. Yeah, we'll see. A lot of issues already in Denver. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. The Colts are in a bit of trouble. Their reserve guard/center Danny Pinter will now miss the entire season with a broken ankle after filling in for the regular starting center Ryan Kelly, who had just now been returning from a foot injury. So this is actually a pretty big loss for Indianapolis's depth. As he had he was active for 46 of his last 46 of Indianapolis's last 50 games. So
wow.
They lose a depth offensive lineman for the season there.
And then Jonathan Taylor. It's another team where it's like several bad things happen at once. Not a good start to the season.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's another thing, too. Jonathan Taylor, they have received a couple of offers for Jonathan Taylor.
Heard the Eagles might be trying to
but,
get him. Crazy.
Yeah, Eagles. I forget what other teams were included, but
oh, the Bills,
teams
maybe.
Are actually skeptical. Or no, they rejected the Dolphins' offer. The Bears and Broncos are also interested. I don't know about the Bills. I haven't heard the Bills yet for Jonathan Taylor.
I heard that once, just on some random article. I heard that once. But, yeah, I mean, just thinking off the cuff, I mean, I think the Bears would be good in, like, cold weather. He'd be a good fit in Chicago. That'd be pretty cool.
Possibly, yeah. But I don't know though, because especially with the cold weather, you know, when he came to New England, he wasn't really that. He wasn't really as strong as he normally is. You know, like he didn't have that same burst.
Oh, that's interesting.
That he normally has when he plays in cold weather. So,
for what it's worth, I took him randomly. I finally got a number one pick in fantasy football, and he was a total bust last year. For whatever that's worth, he really had a down year.
Oh, yeah.
Now he's suddenly demanding a trade. So it's like, okay, Jonathan, if you say so. So who knows?
Yeah.
I thought he was a hardworking dude, but it seems like there's some issues going on with him. Because, I mean, he didn't even really play to his potential last year, and now he wants to leave. Now, again, I know you sent me that ridiculous funny stuff back in the day about what Ursi, what the owner did. I mean, I wouldn't probably want to play for him either. So maybe he's just fed up with playing for a total clown owner.
It wouldn't surprise me. There were a couple of players who were released from the hospital. Isaiah Bolden, after last week's scare against the Packers with his head and neck injury, he did officially travel home because he was officially cleared. However, he did suffer a concussion, so it is likely. If he does remain with New England, it is likely that he will start the year on injured reserve. He didn't practice at all this week. He didn't play in the game at all yesterday. So he's probably a candidate for injured reserve. The Buccaneers backup quarterback John Wolford was released from the hospital after suffering a neck injury. He does officially have movement back in his arm after it went numb. It says here he's facing long odds of forcing the Bucs to carry three quarterbacks because it looks like Kyle Trask will be the second backup or will be the, you know, the second quarterback on the roster.
Yeah.
So, and I don't even know if he practiced actually this week. And according to Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel, Mike White is in concussion protocol. I don't know if he got cleared in time for today's game, which, by the way, was officially suspended due to an injury that occurred on the field after David Davis, one of their wide receivers, was carted off the field on a stretcher. We're seeing a lot of games get and by the way, he is conscious and has all movement in his extremities after being admitted to Baptist Medical Center in Jacksonville. But we're seeing a lot of injuries happen like this.
Yeah, they're stacking up more and more. I'm telling you, these guys are getting faster and bigger every year and more injuries. Just safer not to even let some of your biggest names play in the preseason. It's sad but true. It's just such a risk out there.
You know, it makes you wonder if they may look at this in the off season to potentially find some sort of way to further. I don't know how they could further protect the
it's
team.
Tough.
Or the players, because shit like this
anyway
just happens.
Yeah, you can't really avoid it. The old saying, if you think you're going to get hurt, you probably will. It's such a physical sport. It's like, I don't know.
Right.
Basketball, you want to see, I don't know. I always like seeing the younger guys that are trying to make the team, or like the 27 or 28-year-old journeymen that are from the USFL that are trying to make the roster. That's always exciting. The Kurt Warner story,
right.
But... you know, to see some of these guys get hurt, it's just, like, terrible.
Yeah. The Dolphins have also stated that offensive guard Robert Jones will miss the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season with a sprained MCL. He was competing for a chance to win a spot, to win a starting spot on the offensive line. But the good news is he's not expected to undergo surgery at this time. He did start 7 games at left guard for the Dolphins last season. So when he does come back, it's assumed that he's probably going to be placed on IR to begin with, but he will have a spot when he does officially return from injury. Let's see. Also, the injury that occurred to Bills offensive tackle Tommy Doyle was season-ending officially on last Saturday's preseason game.
Wow.
So Tommy Doyle is out for the season, especially after having a torn ACL last year. So now, I believe it was to the knee that he suffered the injury this time. So he's gone for the season.
I kind of like what the Jets did. If I were ever running a team like that in NFL with preseason, just literally, I don't know, it's frustrating because it's limited exposure. They have to build chemistry because a lot of these guys are free agents coming from different teams now. But it's like I'd almost just wait till the final preseason game and have a dress rehearsal for like a half. And if you get one or two injuries then, it's like other than that, you can't really do much more to avoid all these injuries. You know what I mean? The rest of the preseason have to be mostly rookies and guys trying to make the rosters.
Right. So it's like there's not much you can really do.
No, you can't. I mean, I don't really get into preseason. A couple of years ago I would. Not I'm better or worse than anyone. This year I haven't really been watching it too much. But I noticed watching the Eagles the other night against the Colts, it was fun to watch like Anthony Richardson, but the Eagles weren't really playing a lot of their guys. And I was glad for that. It's like, yeah, I'd like to see someone play, but like the injuries now are so crazy. you might want to reconsider what you want to see. Like, I don't want to see like the star offensive lineman they drafted. Hopefully he'll be good. Jalen Carter. He didn't play at all. And he's 21 years old. They're already sitting him. So, like, the injuries are just getting crazier and crazier every year.
Well, it's probably the reason why they sat him is because he probably showed enough that they needed to see out of him during practice.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just there, certain teams are just going to protect their guys. I mean, I could only imagine, like, if just today, like, he was probably out there for, what, like, a half hour. You know, imagine if Aaron Rodgers got hurt. It would just be horrendous for all the buildup and all the fanfare, all the Jets, like, oh, we're finally back. Imagine if he, like, ended his season today just playing a little bit. I mean, it's just so risky. It's like you don't want to not play him, but then if you do and they get hurt, 20 years later you're, like, thinking about, wow, I ruined Aaron Rodgers. So it's just, like, such a risk to play somebody. It's such a risk to play some of the established, you know, starting veterans at all.
Right.
Like, what are you going to get at, really? Get the feet wet a little bit, but, play him a quarter and then that's it. Just have him practice.
By the way, looks like the Patriots have made their first couple of cuts. Carl Davis, defensive tackle, and Quandre Mosley have both been cut on the way to making the 53-man roster, which, by the way, has to be official by 4 p.m. Tuesday, I believe it is.
Wow. Were either one of those guys promising to you, or were you expecting that, or what? Were you kind of shocked, or were they kind of two guys?
I'd say maybe the more surprising of the two is Davis, because he was good for depth, but I think a lot of it now has to do with the fact that he didn't really have he had like an average type of camp. You know, he didn't really stand out. And considering they want to make room for players like Kayshon Boutte and whatnot, and certain players that they want to hang on to, certain players they may want to hang on to, so they'll have to make cuts that maybe they wouldn't necessarily make otherwise.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the cuts are going to start coming in fast and furious now, that's for sure. Imagine being
right.
These guys, man. You're waiting for a call over the weekend. Like, it's tough. These guys,
yeah.
That's why preseason is cool. And I still like, I know we've gone back and forth sometimes, me and Lou at least, like USFL or the Arena League, stuff like that. I mean, those guys, they're trying to live their dream and get to the NFL. So I think it's awesome of them. So some of these guys are, you know, just playing in the NFL or like selling insurance. Or there's other great careers, you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, they're trying to live a dream. So these cuts are huge for some of these guys.
Yeah, the Eagles, they did release Tyree Jackson as well as Dan Arnold, two tight ends.
Yep. They're good with their – they have Calcaterra and then they have Goddard. Calcaterra is a good backup that they have. And then they have Stahl. They're set there. But, yeah, Dan Arnold was – I think he played for the Panthers with Darnold a little bit. Arnold was good in college. I forgot. I'm still not as big into college, but I'm getting more and more into college, but I forget where he played in college, but Darren Arnold has a pretty good resume. He's only 28 years old, 28 or 29.
Arnold's
a good player. Yeah, Dan Arnold. He'll end up somewhere.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised, honestly, that he didn't stick around.
Well, that's one spot. I mean, they have Stahl and Calcaterra, two good tight ends, and then they have Goddard. So it's like, can't keep too many. I was a little bit more surprised just being an Eagles guy. I follow their roster like all day. You know what I mean? I thought he'd go somewhere in preseason where he could maybe start because he's had some good stats. Hasn't he been like a fringe almost starter a few years here and there? He played for Carolina.
I was going to say, didn't he play for Carolina?
Name. Yeah, he's a recognizable name. So I think he'll probably get signed somewhere, hopefully.
Yeah, he has, as of 2022, he has 95 career catches for 1,258 yards and 7 touchdowns.
Wow. Yeah, he's bounced around a little bit.
Since 2017.
Not everyone's going to be like the next Gronkowski. I mean, those are, you know, he's put up some numbers, put it that way. He's not, you know, he's
right.
He's not chopped liver. He's a legit football player, so I'm sure he should end up somewhere soon. Sometimes they'll cut people, you know. Sometimes they'll cut people to do them a favor so they can catch on somewhere else. Sometimes teams will do that.
One player who has completely gone down the tubes, my God, Isaiah Simmons. The Cardinals trade him to the Giants for a seventh-round pick. This guy was considered to be a quote-unquote positionless player when he came into the league in the 2020 draft as a first-round pick.
I remember that. He's like a cyborg, like plays like 7 different positions. I thought this guy was going to be like a video game, like superhero. Total bust,
yeah.
I guess.
And now he's struggled to adapt to the NFL because he switched from linebacker to safety earlier this summer. And his fifth-year option was then declined back in May. So now he's looking to somehow rejuvenate his career under Wink Martindale before he enters free agency next offseason.
That's nuts. Yeah, you're right, man. He was so hyped. And that's back in years when I really wasn't watching too much college at all. But I definitely remember him coming out. He was like a top 10 surefire pick. One of the best college players in his senior year. Clemson, right?
Yeah,
I think
he was considered to be a hybrid defender during his time at Clemson with his elite size and athleticism, making him be used all over the field, primarily as a linebacker, slot corner, and safety for Clemson.
You know, these are the still recent in our memories. These are the years when Mahomes and I guess Herbert was maybe coming out, but you know what I'm saying, where it was totally gone past happy, where everyone was drafting corners and every linebacker has to cover now. So maybe that's what they were thinking with Simmons because the Cardinals, I think, seventh overall pick. That's crazy. And that's not even a good Cardinals team, and they couldn't keep him? Wow.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, now, like you said, now he's struggling on the Giants. The Giants need – hey, I think the Giants are much improved. I think they could be a playoff team, but, like, that's surprising the Giants. Is he maybe going to get – they traded for him, though, right? I don't think he's going to get cut from the Giants.
No, he won't be cut. They traded for him. They traded a seventh-round pick. So,
I mean, they should be much improved. I know offensively. I mean, they added Waller, couple of really good receivers, Paris Campbell, Watts, Tennessee receiver. But, yeah, I mean, that's surprising because the Giants needed a little bit of help. The Giants have a really good D-line. I think the Giants will be on the playoff cusp this year. But, yeah, that's guys.
The Cardinals weren't done, though. The Cardinals weren't done, though, because they made quite a few trades this week. They also traded offensive lineman Josh Jones and a seventh-round pick to Houston for Houston's fifth-round pick. And Jones started 11 games last season for the Cardinals, and he started out of 47 games in his career, he started 21 of them on the offensive line so far. And he is also in the final year of his rookie deal.
Wow.
So it almost seems like they're trying to admit that the 2020 draft was a complete bust for them, essentially.
Man, it's painful, but yeah, some teams just call quits and just move on. Like you said, sometimes new GM comes in, new eyes on the talent. They want to just get their own people in the building, like the Raiders, Derek Carr. But yeah, I mean, Cardinals are just depleted of talent. I know I would say he's like the Harden to me in football, James Harden style. I'm not a Kyler Murray fan. He apparently like won't even study the playbook. I think it kind of starts with him because they gave him all that money, and they kind of just don't seem like they really have a direction right now. Now they're just like they're blowing up like an already bad defense.
Now just hours after being announced as the number two quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, the Browns then traded Joshua Dobbs and a seventh-round pick in this year's draft to the Cardinals for a fifth-round pick in this year's draft. And all three of these trades came down in less than 12 hours.
Wow.
So now Dobbs is competing for the starting job with Colt McCoy and Clayton Toon in Arizona.
Wow. And Kyler Murray's somewhere playing Call of Duty right now. Crazy times.
Yeah, Kyler Murray is I don't know where he is right now, but he's
they put the clause in. He has to study the playbook every like night. They test him because apparently he wasn't studying the playbook. He was addicted to Call of Duty. That's what I heard. It's just absurd.
Well, it says he's on the physically unable to perform list.
It says on my PlayStation he's online right now. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, he's on PUBG, I think. Hey, Kyler, what's up?
Yeah. Says he's on the physically unable to perform list to start the year. And who knows when he's going to come back because he isn't even in – I don't think he's even in football shape yet.
Wow. I didn't even remember that. I didn't realize he's currently still injured. What a fall from grace. He was the next big thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, with his coach, Kingsbury. They're going to revolutionize
the sport
together.
They were supposed to be the next Belichick and Brady, the way that they were being hyped up.
It was ridiculous. I never saw
elsewhere,
it with
Joey.
I love athletic quarterbacks. I never saw it with Kyler, though. I mean, he always just looks so small for that position. And then when you start hearing that he doesn't study the playbook and he's the quarterback, which is like the de facto leader of any football team, it's just like, you get out of here. What a clown.
Didn't Jamarcus Russell have the same issue that he didn't study the playbook?
Yeah. And it's like as they get these massive contracts, then you find out the guy really doesn't care that much for football, apparently. So, yeah, they both just basically robbed their franchises.
Joey Sly has reportedly earned the Washington Commanders starting kicking job. The Commanders had signed Michael Badgley to push Sly after a good but not great 2022, but now they've officially ended the competition Actually, they ended it before playing their second preseason game last week. So Joey Sly will be the kicker to start off the season for the Washington Commanders.
Interesting.
But we go from NFL retirements and injuries to Major League Baseball. And probably the biggest one, Shohei Ohtani has torn a UCL in his right elbow. So what that means is that officially ends his season as a pitcher. However, he can still play as a hitter. He just can't play as a pitcher. But as far as pitching goes this year, hang on, let me grab the he has a 10-5 record with a 3.14 ERA in 23 games started, with 167 total strikeouts in 132 innings. So he can still hit, though, because I mean he absolutely destroyed a double earlier in today's game for the Angels. So,
but he won't be able,
he can
he won't
still
be able to
hit
at all if he's in Anaheim or wherever. So he's not all next year, right?
I don't know exactly. I don't know exactly if a torn UCL means he needs Tommy John surgery or what.
Went all in for him. Like they've cashed all their chips in. They went balls to the wall for him to build everything for him to hopefully make him stay somehow. And then all the hitters collapsed around him. Crowd has been injured as usual, and now he's injured. He's like, all right, I'm definitely out of here. I mean, it couldn't have happened. It couldn't have gone any worse near the end for them.
Yeah. It basically reinforces the fact that they should have traded Ohtani.
Yeah, it does. And I was of that mindset. I know you were saying that. I was with you, and then I was like, you know what? Since they went in, I think they got hot for like a weekend. One of your shows, they were playing well a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And now it's just totally crap. When you bring in, like, Kron and Moustakas and Grishuk, like, what are you doing? Like, is it 2016 or 2023? Like, those were guys that have not really been good players for a couple of years. So they
exactly.
were, like, going all in, but they were going all in with, like, washed-up players. That doesn't make sense. It doesn't sound like it makes sense.
No, it doesn't, honestly. It doesn't
because they didn't really have a farm system. They added Giolito. Good. I mean, that's one pitcher they added. Like Trout's been a rookie.
Yeah, woohoo.
I really don't know.
Woohoo.
They never had enough pitching. That's the whole premise. That's what they forgot about.
But he did go 2-for-3 today against the Mets with a double and a triple. So
wow.
He is still hitting pretty good. Like I've seen multiple sports doctors mention that the UCL has nothing to do with hitting. It's mainly pitching that it has to do with. So
it's interesting
as far as
to be
hitting
done
goes,
in Anaheim. It's just interesting because now I don't know if he'll be able to pitch next year.
I don't know. That's the big question. When it comes to if he'll be able to pitch. But as far as hitting, he should be able to still hit. The only question comes, does it require Tommy John surgery? If, like, can a torn UCL, could he have surgery this offseason on it and then come back in time for spring training, basically?
Wow.
But, I mean, his numbers so far hitting-wise, 307 average, 44 homers, 92 RBIs. He leads the league in home runs as well as OPS with a 1.083 OPS. So, you know, he's still batting-wise, he's still the same Shohei Ohtani. It's just that he won't be pitching.
And I think someone's still going to be like, dude, it's Shohei, let's get him. It's not going to deter the fans everywhere that want to sign him to their team. I think it's more just horrendous luck. It's just like, I don't know, it's fun. Karma's probably not the best word, but it's just, I think it's like one final reminder that it's time for him to leave Anaheim, if that makes sense. Because it's like they did everything they could. Trout never came back again. He's probably quietly a little bit pissed off at Trout. I mean, it's like you're supposed to be the Pippen-Jordan duo, and Trout's really has, what, he played like 50% the last 3 years maybe? And that hurts a lot.
Yeah.
Because they were in the hunt a couple times, and the Trout's nowhere to be found in their lineup. So now it's like they're adding the old players, and now Ohtani's injured. Ohtani's probably just really fed up with a lot of things in Anaheim.
Well, you know, I don't think, you know, I think that obviously fans will still want him on their team.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I don't think this would dissuade any teams from going after him. I do wonder, though, if there may be the question that if maybe they may need to have a conversation as to whether or not he can continue to be a two-way player, or if he'll have to choose whether or not he wants to be a pitcher or a hitter.
That's so tough, man. It's so fun to watch him do what he does. And, I mean, he DHs. I mean, I guess I'm just a fool for thinking back at, like, Babe Ruth League or Little League, you know. It's like you'd think more guys would be playing both positions. And he does it
right.
So incredibly well. I would hate to see him be the only guy doing it and then suddenly have to stop. Because, I mean.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? It's like they DH him. He's not, like, studying defensive strategies. I'm just trying to make sense of it. I know, because no one. I'm sure, you know, the Yankees, the Red Sox, all these teams have guys that were incredible pitchers and hitters, maybe through all of high school, you know what I mean? And then they just abandon pitching. And it's like, if he's just plugged into hitting second every day and he's just DHing, how much really does he have to concentrate? He's already an incredible hitter naturally. So it's like, I'd hate to see him have to give up pitching. He's the ultimate two-way weapon, double-edged sword.
But at the same time, you know, playing, not just being a pitcher, but also being a hitter, it opens him up to double the opportunity for potential injury.
To get hurt. Yeah, I didn't think of it. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So
that's the reality.
I'm wondering if after this injury, if there's a question as to whether or not, you know, if there's a question as to whether or not maybe they may have a conversation, whichever team signs him, if they're going to have a conversation with him as to, like, you got to choose one or the other. You can't be both.
It's a remarkable thing that not a lot of people talk about. I didn't even think about it, really. But, like, Rick Ankiel was, like, one of the few names I can even remember that were, like, legitimately doing two things at once. And
right.
I just always been confused by that. Like, you're right. The voice of reason, you're probably smarter about it, where it's like twice the injury makes it too risky, but some of these guys are so good at both. If they were on my team, I'd be like, hey, go do it. If you want to play both, I have two really good players for me now, because you're going to help me with hitting and pitching, so go do it. But yeah, teams are scared to do that. Kind of blew up for the Angels. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But I mean,
talking
if you went
about
to Boston
injury.
Or L.A., just one last thing, Steve. I mean, I would think, though, to agree with you, if whoever signs him, if I were the GM or the owner of his next team, I think he's out of Anaheim, I definitely want him to do both. As long as he can return to football.
Oh, wait a minute. It says here he did undergo Tommy John surgery back in 2018 for the same injury. So, yeah,
I read that.
he has Tommy John surgery.
So, yeah, it's risky. You might just totally break him down if you keep putting him in both spots. I don't know. If he gives up pitching,
and they're unsure.
I want him to be a right fielder or a left fielder. He's got a cannon of an arm. See, the guy's like the best athlete if you just see him, like, the way he moves around. I don't want to just have him sit in DH every single day for, like, $500 million.
Right.
I want him at least in the field if he can't pitch.
Well, it says here they may shut him down immediately, potentially.
Wow.
In order for him to have the surgery. Honestly, if I were them, I would shut him down. They have they're 9.5 back in the wild card, 10.5 back in the division. They're not going to make the playoffs. So
no.
Just shut him down.
And, dude, you can't, like, force him to come out. He might get even more pissed off. Like, I guess if they have any chance now to re-sign him, you got to do right by him. Because other players are watching, too, how they operate with him. They got to
I would tell him it's in his best interest if he wants to, you know, it would be in his best interest to do the surgery now, and it gives him more of an opportunity. It gives him a shorter wait time to heal up, to where if he does have a chance to play at all next season, it would be less time that he would miss.
Yeah. Just think about that. I mean, they went all in, and now they're probably going to lose him. They're just, and then Schott's getting there injured, but he's not going anywhere.
Right.
It's so frustrating if you're running the Angels. But again, they've done a lot of stupid stuff. They just never addressed pitching through the years.
Speaking of pitching and also speaking of injuries, Steven Strasburg is set to retire from baseball, according to people close to him. The 35-year-old was a three-time All-Star, retiring with a 113-62 record, a 3.24 ERA, and over 1,700 strikeouts in 247 regular season starts. At his peak, nobody could argue that Strasburg wasn't the best pitcher in baseball. But in 13 years, he made 30 or more starts just three times. And after signing a massive 7-year, $245 million extension in December of 2019, he's only played in just 31 1/3 innings since.
So brutal. I mean, he's been even more just destroyed by injuries. But, I mean, it's like DeGrom, two of the very, very best in a long time. Just terrible injuries. But yeah, Strasburg, I guess even especially more so than even DeGrom. Like you said, I mean, he's played almost half of his career. He's had worse injury problems than even DeGrom. Definitely. Several years. Not one or two or three. I mean, he's missed a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
He's missed like half of his career.
Yeah, Strasburg.
Back to the World Series.
I mean, he's lucky he won that World Series in 2019, where he was the MVP, and he ended up getting that massive contract because of it.
Wow, that's
because
right.
Otherwise,
yep.
I mean, this is basically. I mean, we talk about Chris Sale ruining his career with injuries. I think Strasburg is actually worse.
My bad.
Strasburg.
I brought him up too. He's another incredible pitcher too. Sale, DeGrom, Strasburg. Yeah, those three. But yeah, Strasburg's got worse than Sale and DeGrom, definitely with the injury bug.
I mean, Strasburg hasn't played in 2 years.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I'm sorry. No, he did play last season, where he gave up 7 earned runs and 4 1/3 innings of work before he returned to the injured list 5 days later with a stress reaction in the ribs.
Wow.
And now he suffered a setback this year due to a nerve related setback in his recovery from thoracic outlet syndrome. And he was shut down from all physical activity back in June due to severe nerve damage. And he ended up having to have a rib and 2 neck muscles removed in an effort to address his injury.
Whoa, that's hardcore. Jeez. he was trying to get back
out
there.
It just sucks. It just sucks because this kid was looked at by many as I mean, you take a look at the repertoire that he had every time he would go to the mound, carrying a 4-seam fastball, a 2-seam fastball, changeup, a slider cutter, and.
Wow.
You know, he ended up having Tommy John surgery before he even began his major league career, and somehow the velocity was not affected at all.
Jeez. Yeah, he was could have been one of the best ever. Longevity. A lot of people are going to say that. And Sale's right up there, too. But, I mean, I think DeGrom is a little bit – I think DeGrom and Strasburg are a little bit further up the totem pole. Just a little bit. But, I mean, I think Strasburg.
And you know what's some
– your skills, I think Strasburg's definitely the best out of the three. Would you think so, or DeGrom or Sale?
I mean, if healthy, I would say Strasburg.
A full career. Full career. Yeah, I think Strasburg.
Oh, full DeGrom career?
Started. Yeah.
No, I would say DeGrom. I would say DeGrom.
DeGrom started pitching in the big leagues when he was, what, like 27 or 28? Crazy.
Oh,
strange
actually,
trip.
Yeah. Hang on. Wait a minute.
DeGrom's is such a unique story. The shortstop.
Hang on a minute. Let me look up DeGrom's stat line. I don't know. The thing with DeGrom is, yeah, he was injured, but he still ended up coming back to pitch during certain years.
Yeah,
you know, it just seems like Strasburg was always way too fucking injured to where he would be shut down multiple times during the season.
Yeah, that's right.
But
well,
looking at DeGrom's record, though. He had 4 seasons of 30 or more games with the Mets. However, since 2019, he hasn't pitched more than 15 games in the season. You know what? I don't know. I don't know what the who I would put over who now. I think Sale is at the bottom, though. I think Sale is at the bottom because ever since his first year post-Chicago, when he had that first year in Boston where he was lethal, and ever since then he's basically sucked.
Yeah.
So... I mean, I would put Sale at the bottom of that list.
Yeah,
but
ball,
as
yeah.
far as no, DeGrom, huh?
Yeah, no, I was just gonna say Sale's awesome. He's right there, but it's like I think the slightly the overall just so devastating the arsenal. I'd give the slight edge to Strasburg and DeGrom. I think in either order you could flip them. Sale's right there as the third. I mean, all healthy,
right.
All three automatic Hall of Famers. They've just been, like, rocked by injuries.
Yeah, you know, I think, obviously, it's a tighter competition between DeGrom and Strasburg, to be perfectly honest. Because while DeGrom, I mean, the thing that I'm looking at with DeGrom is, while the Mets sucked, DeGrom was basically their entire pitching staff.
Yeah, not
him
and
Syndergaard.
Like not to sound like a totally disgruntled, biased Mets fan, but you know baseball. He also didn't get a lot of run support. There were years when he almost had like a sub-3 ERA, like 500 pitcher. I mean,
right?
Like torture. His teammates should have been arrested.
No, I am thinking of malpractice. I am thinking of that. Don't worry about that. I am thinking of that.
He had such bad luck with the run support was so dreadful. It was just like godly. It was like he got embarrassing. I'm surprised he stayed at Met as long as he did. I would have left town. I mean, you know, it's like he deserved better, but then the injuries caught up, and then good for him, man. He's got a lot of money from Texas because he didn't mean to get injured. It wasn't his fault. So God bless him. He got
however,
a huge contract.
Strasburg, now, granted, Strasburg has been in the league longer, but Strasburg has had more years of 20-plus game seasons compared to while DeGrom has one more year of 30-plus game seasons, Strasburg has a couple more years of 20-plus game seasons than DeGrom does.
Mm-hmm.
So I would almost be inclined to put Strasburg over DeGrom.
Yeah. Yeah,
now,
so
of course, you know, assuming DeGrom doesn't retire and DeGrom continues pitching after this year, you know, obviously that argument becomes null and void, essentially. But as of this moment where Strasburg is retiring, I would rank Strasburg above DeGrom.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. Yep. He was just even more devastating. He had the whole bag of tricks, like you said, the whole arsenal.
Yeah. It's just once Strasburg entered his 30s, he basically fell apart. Because don't forget,
yeah,
Strasburg came into the league at 21. DeGrom came into the league at 26.
Yeah, that's not.
And Strasburg already had 4 years of experience in the league when DeGrom came in.
Wow. Remarkable.
So,
what could
yeah.
have been for all three of them?
I know. It's honestly pretty damn sad. by the
really
way, did you hear
to think about.
Did you hear about we talked about this earlier at the top of the show. Did you hear about the passing of Bray Wyatt, WWE
yeah,
wrestler?
While I'm not, I've gotten more and more into it. I loved it through the years. I'm getting back into it now, watching like Monday nights and stuff. Yeah, so I don't know a terrible amount about him. I read a lot, though. I know he was a really celebrated, really popular guy, really sounded like a really nice guy, too.
Yeah, he was
and immensely
son,
important.
He was the son of IRS. If you remember
that.
Oh,
I didn't realize that part of it. So yeah, just really really sad news. And I guess so, what was it, COVID and then heart conditions and then heart attack. Just terrible,
yeah.
Way too young. Really, really unfortunate.
Yeah,
and then I heard
suffered,
they gave a nice tribute to him. They had a tribute to him last night
yeah,
or the
they
night
did.
Before or something.
Yeah, last night they gave a heartfelt tribute, They gave him a tribute video and everything that they normally do for wrestlers who pass away, especially and even more. They did a tribute show to him. They did it both to him and Terry Funk, but he's basically, I believe, the fourth active wrestler. No, fifth. The fifth active wrestler to have passed away while still wrestling for the company. Because there was Owen Hart, who died literally on pay-per-view, from falling from the rafters.
Oh, did you see that? Or that's horrendous.
No, it wasn't on. They cut to shock and horror from the fans. After they aired a video promo, because he was starting to come down to the ring from the rafters during the video promo, and he ended up something ended up happening with the cord that it was attached that he was attached to, and he ended up basically detaching from the cord, and he ended up falling right into the ring, hitting the turnbuckle before then falling backwards in the ring.
Just brutal. Yeah, and I mean, it's like football junior Seo and several other people in different sports too. Hockey, there's been a couple really tragic, really unseemly, untimely, or, you know, young deaths, or, you know, people kind of losing it. There's been worse deaths. You know, I know in hockey a couple times where they find people in hotel rooms and what have you, like, but then they're still in their 30s. So, like, head, brain injuries and stuff, it's just, you know, wrestling's a really grueling physical sport. So there'll probably be more research and more information as it goes along, you know, in the future about it. But, I mean, 36 years old is far too young for anyone. Really tragic.
Yeah, then they lost Brian Pillman to a heart attack. Or, no, they lost Brian Pillman to – wait a minute. Was it Brian Pillman who died first, or was it Owen Hart? I forget who died first, if it was Owen Hart or Brian Pillman, but they lost Brian Pillman to a heart attack at the age of 35.
Wow.
Then in 2005, they lost Eddie Guerrero to heart failure at the age of 38. Because of all the alcohol and steroid abuse that he had taken during his early part of his career.
Wow.
And then they lost Chris Benoit in 2007 due to a double murder suicide where he killed his wife and son before realizing what he did, and then he hung himself with his own gym equipment.
Wow.
And they attributed that to all of the multiple concussions that he had in his career, which basically they said that when he died, he had the brain of an 84-year-old.
God, and then we don't even have to.
Because of all the...
Just to build on your all the evidence you're providing, and, you know, obviously Junior Seau, and then I saw a couple of different hockey players where they were just different things, you know, suddenly just the trauma, the, you know, the hits and the collisions and all the brute force. It's just, so I don't know if it's played into this or if it really was just COVID. You know, it sounds like he's an awesome guy. Gone too soon from the wrestling world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what it was? They said that basically he, around WrestleMania, which was back in March and April, he was removed from their plans due to contracting COVID. And basically, there were complications from COVID that affected his heart, and he ended up dying from the heart attack a couple of days ago.
Wow.
That basically COVID had severely weakened his the system around his heart, basically.
Man, so tough.
He passed away at the age of 36.
So tough.
And he was probably one of the most creative minds in this modern era of professional wrestling. Like, some of the characters that he introduced to the wrestling world, one of his characters was a cult leader. The other one was like some sort of horror character that you would see in a horror movie, where it was like a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where he would be Pee Wee Herman. And then it was like if Pee Wee Herman had an alter ego who then turned into Jason Voorhees.
Wow.
That's basically what his second character was. And then just recently he was acting as himself. Like, he referred to himself as Wyndham Rotunda, which is his real name. When he came back from a long hiatus, and it was sort of like he was diving into that second character, but then he was, it's like he was being influenced from an outside force or something. So, you know, he was probably the most creative wrestler that we've had in professional wrestling over the last decade that never really got the opportunity to have a long-term run with the main title.
Very unfortunate. Gone too soon.
Yeah. It's very unfortunate. And we also lost Terry Funk, who was one of the innovators of hardcore wrestling.
That's the name, yeah.
Back in the 90s.
Yeah, on Facebook I saw Ric Flair. I'm a fan of his page. He's hilarious. He's awesome follow.
He had a couple of classic matches with Flair too.
Yeah, that's how I found out about Funk again. I knew the name, but I hadn't heard it in years. And he said gone too soon first. And also my old friend Terry Funk, he had a picture of them both through the years. So I said, wow. I mean, so I guess they were both within a couple of days. Just really, really tough.
Yeah. Actually, it was back to back days. Funk on Wednesday and Wyatt on a. But I mean, the last time Funk was seen in a wrestling ring was he had a hardcore match at ECW, or I think it was ECW One Night Stand in 2006, where he had a hardcore match, I believe it was. Let me double check. I think, yeah, he had a. Hardcore match where he teamed with Tommy Dreamer and Beulah McGillicuddy, Tommy's real life wife, in a losing effort against Mick Foley, Edge, and Lita. And Funk, during the match, he injured his left eye with barbed wire, and he ended up being taken backstage, but he later then returned to the match with a bloody cloth tied over his eye to hit Foley with a flaming 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire.
Wow.
I mean, you want to talk about hardcore.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
this is a guy who was legitimate. He was a legitimate hardcore wrestler in his later wrestling years.
Look at their schedule. Look at their schedule too. You know the deal. I mean, you're an aficionado of that sport. They're year round. Like Florida Monday night, and then, you know, wherever. Georgia Tuesday night, and
yeah.
Then Milwaukee or Ohio Thursday night. They're going like 6 days a week, 5 days a week at least. I mean,
right.
A lot of those guys are touring a lot. So they're not playing football. I'm not minimizing football by any means, but they have a really rigorous schedule of a lot of, really violent activity, really. It's unfortunate.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it takes a toll, man.
Yeah, the last time he was seen in the WWE was back in 2016, where he gave a chainsaw to a wrestler named Dean Ambrose in reference to his previous gimmick, where he was called Chainsaw Charlie, and he would come out to the ring with a chainsaw as part of his gimmick. But after that, basically... He pretty much stopped making appearances after that. From what I've heard, it sounds like he died of natural causes. So he was living with dementia, though, in the later years of his life.
Wow. Dad. A lot of blunt force trauma, a lot of head wounds. You know, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah, so I thought it was pretty good that they did a dual tribute show last night to the both of them. They even had they had Cody Rhodes speak about
cool.
Terry Funk, considering the fact that Funk was very close to his father, Dusty Rhodes.
Nice, that's really cool.
So, it was. I mean, it really brought me back. Like, I remember back in 2005 when I was in like the eighth grade, and I remember bawling when I heard about Eddie Guerrero passing away, because Eddie Guerrero at the time was one of my favorite wrestlers.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
I sort of did the same thing with Benoit in 2007, and I mean, there's been deaths of wrestlers since then, but I don't know. It's something about Bray Wyatt hit me, basically. I guess maybe it's because of the fact that, you know, he was dealing with mental health issues too. So a lot of people were worried that when he went out and that he was dealing with mental health issues, and a lot of people were worried that when he died, that he had potentially taken his life.
Oh, okay, yeah. So there were the past history suggested that maybe he ended it himself.
Possibly.
That's what
some people were thinking. But, I mean, I guess luckily, but also not luckily, it was because of a heart attack. I mean, as bad as that is to say, you know, it just sucks because, you know, he never really got a chance to express his creativity under Vince McMahon. I mean, he did, but not in a, you know, it's almost like he had a little bit of a leash on him. But now, under Triple H, he was getting the opportunity to really, really branch out and express his creativity in many different ways. And he was supposed to have this big run coming back. And unfortunately, he ended up passing away like he did. So,
wow. Very sad.
But, yeah. Yeah, it is. It just shows you that life can be taken away at any moment, basically.
Yep, definitely.
One little bit of baseball news. Again, I should have stayed on baseball here, but the Nationals have signed manager Dave Martinez to a 2-year contract extension. And also, they are close to reaching a extension with general manager Mike Rizzo as well, which honestly, I believe this is a bit of a, I think this is a bit of a surprise that they're holding on to Dave Martinez, because normally, I mean, granted he won a World Series with them, but normally when you're going through a rebuild, normally, they want a different voice at the helm, but he's been managing Washington since 2018.
Interesting. Well, but at the same time, see, I mean, they're starting to kind of turn it around. I mean, they're kind of still near the cellar with the Mets, but like they've been much improved the past couple months, and they have young players like C.J. Abrams, the highly touted guy they got for Juan Soto, the leadoff shortstop. He's awesome. So he's turning it around, and then they just crushed the draft. They got, what did they get? Dylan Cruz, I think. They're an awesome center fielder who will probably be up next year. Point being, I mean, they're coming back around. They should be a lot better even next year.
Cruz
really
is
like.
Already
he's got
in
an injury. Cruz is
already in Double A right now.
Yeah. And then, So they have a couple guys that they drafted that they got as compensation for Soto. So, yeah, it's a little bit unique. You think maybe they would call on a new voice to lead the way, but he's won a ring, and they're playing a lot better under him. So it's like, hey, they're giving them a shot to keep him around. You know, for the good – he went through the dark days after the ring with him, and now maybe they're soon going to be good again. Amazing. The whole NL East is getting better again, and the Mets are like floundering. But we'll see what their draft picks, we'll see what their competition for Mad Max and Verlander turn out to be.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, on the league, just a little tidbit: the Yankees, when their losing streak was extended to 9 games, it's actually the longest since 1982.
Wow.
I think it was.
Spoon's, yeah, untouchable, I guess. Spoon and Cashman are like
and
Teflon, can't get touched. They just keep losing.
Right.
So it's okay, mediocre, I guess, in the Bronx now. It's a new fad.
Well,
that,
I don't know, because
Steinbrenner's son has made it up. George Steinbrenner would be rolling in his grave.
Yeah. I mean, I said this on Lou's show earlier today, but I think, if anything, I think Cashman has more of a leash than Boone does.
Yeah, they got to get rid of one, so Boone will be the fall guy. I agree with that.
I think Cashman, because of the fact that Cashman has been with the team since the 80s.
Yeah, and I think a guy like Don Mattingly is perfect, like to quiet down the pissed-off fans right now. They need to make some kind of change. Maybe bring back a popular Don Mattingly, someone like that, be the manager.
Maybe. I know what's-his-name has been thrown out there. Joe Girardi has been thrown out there. I don't think that would be a good move. I think Joe Girardi, he probably should coach again, but I don't think it should be for the Yankees.
I think if Buck, just now that I'm thinking, I haven't thought about Girardi's name for a year. If Buck Showalter is not getting any younger, maybe Girardi could move over to coach the Mets. I mean, I know, I remember that was kind of a rude exit. I mean, he got kind of shown the door, like he wasn't really expecting to get fired when he left the Yankees. So maybe maybe there's bad blood there. You know, maybe he doesn't even want to come back. He probably would, but I don't know. Maybe that bridge just burns. I don't know. But yeah, Girardi, I think Mattingly for years was coaching the Marlins, who had no talent. Now they revamped their roster, and they'd already let go of Mattingly. I mean, the Marlins have a much better team than they had for the last 5 years. And that was weird. Like, Mattingly stayed with them for a long time, and then he got let go. So Mattingly's available. I don't know. He didn't have much to work with for a couple of years in Miami.
Also, continuing on the stat line here, Alex Verdugo, with a home run today in the first inning, became the first Red Sox player in Red Sox history to lead off 3 straight games with a home run. It's hard to imagine, but he is actually the first player in Red Sox history to do that.
Well, Cora getting really pissed off at him and lighting him up to the media in front of everyone to hear and see. Maybe it lit a spark under Verdugo's, you know what. Now he's definitely performing, set a record.
Well, don't forget though, these last 2 games have been against the Dodgers, the team that gave him up for Mookie Betts. So
did they win today? They were winning in the 7th.
Did they beat the Dodgers? 8-5. Yeah, 8-5. Mookie Betts had a chance with the bases loaded in the 9th, but he flew out to deep center field.
Wow, deep center field, close call. So they're split so far?
Did
they play 2 games or 3?
Yeah, they're split.
Oh, that's going to be a fun one. Is that ESPN baseball tomorrow night?
You know what? I do not know, but let me check right now.
Finally not the Yankees? Is it someone else on a Sunday night?
I would assume it's probably.
Yeah, you would think with Mookie coming back to L.A. and then even Verdugo, like, that's a good. And, I mean, dude, the Dodgers are in the race. The Sox. Dodgers, they love putting them on TV.
Nope.
You'd think it would be the
game. Nope, it's Atlanta and San Francisco.
Not bad. But, yeah, I would have gone Dodgers, Sox. Do they flex games like they do in the NFL where they change the schedule?
Nope.
If they're doing really well?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
So that's the reason.
You could have a team sucks like Oakland. You could have a team that absolutely sucks like Oakland, and if they're scheduled for Monday Night Baseball, they're scheduled for Monday Night Baseball.
That's weird. Yeah, you would think with Mookie coming back to Boston, that would have been fun for a Sunday night game in Fenway. Wow. Strange. San Fran's in a spiral. But, yeah, I mean, I could understand Atlanta, but whatever. It is what it is.
Want to touch on some NHL before we only have about 16 minutes to go here. Goaltender Jonathan Bernier has officially retired after 14 NHL seasons. He retires with a career record of 165 wins, 163 losses, and 40 overtime losses. With a career goals against average of 2.77 and a career save percentage of 91.2. He won the Stanley Cup back in 2012 with the LA Kings. And I know those stats don't really, the win-loss stats don't really look good, but I should preface that he played for some seasons, he played on some horrible teams.
Yeah,
like,
not at
I'm
all.
Talking the Maple Leafs. I'm talking the Maple Leafs before they got Austin Matthews. The Colorado Avalanche before they turned into the absolute beast that they are now. He played for three seasons with Detroit, who were fucking atrocious from 2018 to 2021. And he also played for New Jersey back last season. Well, not this past season, but this past season he didn't even play. But 2021-2022, he played for New Jersey for 10 games. But otherwise, yeah, he played on some fucking horrible teams on some of the seasons that he had.
Yeah, just not his fault. Still, I mean, the save percentage is good. The wins and losses, you can't, it's like the old, I mean, give up one or two goals and you lose. Do you suck for losing? Absolutely not. So he had some good years, just got stuck on some crappy rosters sometimes.
I would say this, too. To show how good he is, during the 2016-2017 season with the Anaheim Ducks, he had a record of 21-7-4, which,
wow.
Considering the team that Anaheim is, let's see. Oh, they did make the playoffs that year. They got eliminated in the conference finals that year. But considering the team that Anaheim has been since, yeah. If anything, he was lucky to even have that record that season.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Also around the league, speaking of Austin Matthews, he signed a 4-year extension with Toronto worth an average annual value of $13.25 million. Toronto's general manager is on fucking crack. If you're giving him a bigger contract annually than David Pastrnak, I'm sorry. No, you know, this just shows that Austin Matthews' agent won out in the end because Toronto was basically – they were facing the possibility of losing both William Nylander and Austin Matthews potentially after this upcoming season. So now that he's signed this extension, they're going to be severely handicapped. Potentially, because now they also have to sign Nylander to an extension.
Yeah, the agent held him up for ransom. It's going to bite him in the end, it seems like.
I mean, don't get me wrong. He's worth the money.
But damn, if
don't
you, damn,
get me
if you
wrong.
You don't sign him. It's like you want to keep him. So it's like, damn, you're really going to do me like this? But the agent totally totally screwed him. Because now, like you said,
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think he's worth being highly paid because he did record 60 goals two seasons ago. He is worth being highly paid, but, you know, while you're giving him this massive contract, you're also severely handicapping what you can do with the rest of the team.
Yeah. Some of that falls on the player, too. When players and agents do that, like, is he not going to be able to eat if he doesn't get all that money? Like, you got to be able to take one for the team and allow them to sign other great players. So it's partially on the player, too, I think, along with the agent. The agent gets a nice cut of that, so the agent's looking to just totally ransack and hold the team hostage. But the player can be like, hey, you know what? Let's chill out. Let's not totally screw my team up. But I guess he didn't. He went along with it.
Right. Also around the league, Brandon Hagel signed a 8-year extension with the Tampa Bay Lightning worth an average annual value of $6.5 million per year. And basically what this says is the Boston Bruins are going to have to pay up for Jake DeBrusk if they want to keep Jake DeBrusk. Because Hagel had a breakout year this year, 64 points in 81 games, 30 goals, 34 assists. Basically, this is the type of contract that Jake DeBrusk is going to be looking at when it comes to contract negotiations with the Boston Bruins coming up.
Yeah.
And if they want to hang on to DeBrusk, the Bruins are going to have to pony up cash. That much I know. But it was,
yep.
You know, I do believe that this is the right, you know, for somebody who had a breakout year like he did this year, $6.5 million sounds about right for Hagel. But, man, Tampa, they have an affinity for 8-year deals for some reason. In that, I mean, this is like the fourth 8-year deal I think they have on that team.
Wow. Yeah, they hate to say goodbye. But, I mean, they've had a good a good winning formula through the years, especially recently. So,
yeah, they have.
That's the way they do business.
Yeah, they've definitely had a winning formula. Just that, you know, for a guy who – this is the first time that he's gone over 40 points in a season.
Yeah, see that.
So,
I agree with you there. That's a little steep. I know they like to lock up key players, but the production isn't in line with that. That's a lot of money for that production.
I mean, I could see them giving him $5.5 million per season, but I know it sounds kind of weird. Like, oh, what's an extra mil gonna do? To be honest, a lot. An extra million could be the difference between whether or not a team can afford another depth player or whether a team may be forced to send somebody down and potentially and expose them to waivers in order to clear cap space.
That's true. Yeah, it could be a dangerous proposition for them.
Yeah. And Ricky. It's very dangerous. It's very dangerous when it comes to NHL waivers because players can be claimed at any point once they're put on waivers.
Wow. Yeah.
Not at any point, but basically they get exposed to each of the rest of the teams, and they go by order of what their record is, what the team's record is.
Sure.
In regards to whether or not the team wants to get them or not. The Boston Bruins have signed veteran forward Alex Kieson to a professional tryout. He won the Stanley Cup with the Washington Capitals back in 2018, but since then he has been used as a depth forward, fourth line forward, basically, since he won the cup back in 2018. And it's unfortunate for the Bruins because these are the type of players that they're now going to be forced to sign with them being severely up against the cap.
Wow.
I mean, a professional tryout is basically minimum. Matter of fact, let me look and see. How much do they earn on a PTO? Okay. So he's just invited to training camp. He's not officially on the roster yet. Okay, so that's all that is. So if he does get signed, it'll probably be to like a veteran minimum deal, so like $800,000 or something. I believe
wow.
is the veteran minimum. In the NBA, Franz Wagner will undergo an MRI after suffering an apparent sprained ankle during Friday's 81-63 win over Japan. He suffered the injury with just under 5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter for Germany. So he did limp off the court, though, under his own power, but it is unknown in terms of his ability for tomorrow. But Germany's coach did describe the injury as a slight sprain, so maybe there's not too much to worry about for him and also for Orlando as well, who he plays for, obviously, in the NBA. Montrezl Harrell, he officially underwent surgery to repair the torn ACL and meniscus in his right knee. So he is out indefinitely, probably out for the season for Philadelphia. And speaking of Philadelphia, the NBA has launched an inquiry into the situation regarding James Harden's public admonishment of Daryl Morey. And whether or not Harden is violating the league's CBA, though Harden has made it clear that his comments were regarding the 76ers ending trade discussions with other teams. Also, the NBA has fined him $100,000 for his recent comments about Daryl Morey.
Gosh. Wherever he goes, there's trouble. The chemistry
exactly.
killer himself. The chemistry killer himself, Mr. Harden. Mr. Malcontent.
It's basically like there can't be an NBA season without some sort of drama with him.
Yes, it's like part of his DNA. He just has to have drama. Kyrie.
Oh, also, there is an update, by the way, on Bronny James. In particular, it said that he was diagnosed with a congenital heart, basically the same thing that that Shaq's son has. And that is apparently what caused the cardiac arrest during his practice. But the family is very confident that he will make a full recovery and return to basketball in the near future.
That's good news. It sounds like it's treatable.
So,
now that they've identified it, they can keep it in check.
Right.
With the proper medication and whatnot. That's good news.
So, it's very good news. But with that being said, we are reaching the end of our show tonight. Just a reminder for anybody who is interested in talking some sports, if you're listening, obviously, on the archives, you can join the Sports Whispers group by going to facebook.com/groups/sportswhispers. If you want to subscribe to the Missy AE podcast, you can do so by going to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE or subscribing on any of our major podcast networks like iTunes, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and so on and so forth. Also, a reminder for Big Brother fans, we will have the Big Brother Recap podcast next Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And also for Survivor fans, we will have probably the Survivor Recap show coming up as soon as Survivor starts up. And I believe I'm going to talk to Jim about the cast assessment and when that may be. So... stay tuned to blogtalkradio.com/MissyAE for that. But I do want to thank Lou, Alex, and Diane for joining me tonight. We will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Everybody have a great rest of your weekend, and we will see you guys next Saturday night.
Great show.